listener-supported non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. You are listening to WHFR Dearborn. Welcome one and all to another Tuesday Radio Vault program. The March 18 edition of Radio Vault, live and direct. And let's quickly go over our menu before we get to the festivities. From 1943, we will be taking a listen to the Jack Benny Show. This is the show where Jack was actually a little under the weather, so he got George Burns and Gracie Allen to fill in for him. That'll be our show to kick things off. Then we have Fibber McGee and Molly. Another escapade with both of them. This is the one about running a pet shop, going back to 1937. We have got the Great Gildersleeve on tap for today. And this is the episode from a little bit later on in this series, toward the end of Harold Perry's run as the Great Gildersleeve. And this is the one about Leroy's Billy Goat. We will also be hearing Fred Allen today. For a period of time, Fred Allen was sponsored by a gas station. So we will be hearing the Texaco Star Parade or something like that. Fred Allen's skit of Sabi Lobby, among other things. And then somewhere along the line, we're going to be listening to Eve Arden, Eunice Queedens, her real name, R. Miss Brooks. Successful both on radio and television. Boys and girls, moms and dads, this is Radio Vault, and you have found it on 89.3 WHFR. Let us go back to March 7, 1942. And the Jack Benny Show.
The Great Nuts Flakes program with Rochester, Dennis Day, Bill Goodwin, Paul Whiteman and his orchestra, and yours truly, Don Wilson. And appearing for Jack Benny, who is confined with a cold, we have Jack's personal friends, George Burns and Gracie Allen. Gentlemen, when Jack Benny found that he couldn't do his broadcast tonight, he told me to call on his good friends George Burns and Gracie Allen and ask them to pinch hit for him. So I started for the Burns Hotel to tell them about Jack's problem, never dreaming that another problem was already brewing in the domestic life of George and Gracie.
Gracie, would you please get away from that piano? We've been in New York a week now, and that's all I've heard.
But, George, March 16th is my concert with Paul Whiteman, Carnegie Hall. If I don't practice, I may lose all the magic in my finger.
Look, don't you realize that you're driving everybody nuts with this idea? In the past week, Paul Whiteman has lost 20 pounds.
Oh, I don't think he really lost them, dear. I think they just slipped down a little.
Gracie, why don't you give up the concert idea and try to take an interest in something else?
Oh, I've been busy, George. I spent a whole day showing Herman the sights of the city.
That's great. Sightseeing with a silly duck.
Well, he enjoyed every minute of it, especially at City Hall when I took him in to see Mayor LaGuardia.
Gracie, you shouldn't take a duck in to see LaGuardia.
Well, I simply had to, George. I knew he'd never get another chance to meet a mayor that he could stand beside and look right in the eye.
Well,
I never thought of that.
Well, you have to excuse me now, George. I have to go work on the gown I'm designing to wear at my concert.
Now, Gracie, that...
Oh, it's a wonderful gown, dear. I decided it should be a musical creation. White satin with a very wide skirt.
What's musical about that?
Well, that's the beauty of it, dear. No one will realize how clever I am until I sit down and lean back.
And then what happens?
Well, I've got an accordion in the bustle.
Oh, no.
Well, I'll be back in a minute, dear.
I wonder how it feels to be married to a woman who makes sense. Oh, well, I'll never know. Come in.
Hello, George.
Well, I'll be Don. Don Wilson. Come on in, Don. How's Jack?
Well, that's why I'm here, George. Jack has a bad cold.
Really? Well, I'm sorry to hear it.
He'd like me to ask you a favor, George.
For sure. Anything at all.
Well, Jack won't be able to work tonight, so he wants you and Gracie to take over his show. Now, can you do it?
Well, sure, Don. We'll be happy to do anything for Jack.
Naturally, he knows that your time is valuable, and he doesn't expect you to do it for nothing.
Oh, now, Don.
He wants me to tell you that while he's lying in bed, he'll knit you a muffler.
Ah, good old Jack.
Now, all you have to do is buy the knitting needles and four balls of yarn.
Isn't four balls of yarn a lot for a muffler?
Well, Jack wants one, too.
Oh, well, that's nice. Gee, I've always envied Jack getting all those laughs. And here's my chance to kill all the people just by saying, or, yipe. And then he always gets a scream when he says, I do not marry and shut up.
Yeah, that Benny does say the funniest thing.
Isn't he a scream? Yes, he's a real wit, yes.
Oh, George, did you... Why, Paul Whiteman, I'm glad you dropped in.
No, Gracie, I'm Don Wilson, don't you remember?
Oh, of course, Don, how silly of me. I should have looked at your face first.
Gracie, Don has got some news for us.
Yes, Gracie. You see, Jack Benny is sick in bed, and he wants you...
Sick in bed? Oh, my goodness. I must send him a job, my homemade crab apple jelly, right away.
Well, now,
oh,
Gracie...
Oh, he'll love it. He'll love it. I use only the very best apples and the very best crabs.
Well, I don't think Jack...
I sent some of it to my sister Bessie when she had her operation. Of course, I can't tell you about Bessie's operation.
Well, good.
It was done by an army surgeon, and naturally that makes it a military secret.
Gracie, Don wants us to do Jack Benny's program tonight.
Oh, I'm sorry, George, but I couldn't think of going on Jack's program.
You what?
Well, isn't that a comedy program?
Oh, yes.
And don't people laugh at it?
Well, sure.
Well, George, what would my public think? I'm a concert artist.
What's she talking about, George?
Well, Gracie thinks she's going to play the piano at Paul Whiteman's concert in Carnegie Hall.
Yes, would you like to hear the number I'm going to play, Don? Here it is.
And that's what you're going to play at Carnegie Hall?
Well, there's no sense in playing something I don't know.
Gracie, forget this foolishness. We've got to do Jack's program tonight.
Well, I'm awfully sorry, but I couldn't accept an offer to appear on the radio. Except on a musical program, of course, such as dear Artie has.
Oh, you mean Artie Shaw?
Oh, my goodness, no. Artie Toscanini.
Gracie, have you gone out of your mind? We can't let Jack Benny down.
Well, George, I have my career to think of. No great musician can afford to be laughed at. Did Mendelssohn do it? Did Mendel's daughter do it? Did Mendel himself do it?
No, that was a great act, too. The musical Mendels. They were next to closing at the Jefferson.
Gracie, now you mustn't think only of yourself. Think of George. He's very anxious to do Jack Benny's show.
Well, I don't know why. George doesn't know a soul in St. Joe.
Gracie, will you stop being so stubborn?
Well, George, I just can't risk my concert career. There's the world of music, and then there's the world of comedy. You can't mix the two. You know what I always say? East is east, and west is west, and north is north, and south is south, and east is east, and west. Well, I guess that covers it.
Yes. That even overlaps a little bit. Yes.
This is Paul
Paul Whiteman, and here's one of America's most popular singers with one of America's most popular songs, Dennis Day, singing There Are Such Things.
Gracie, you've just got to listen to reason. The Benny program goes on the air in an hour.
I'm sorry, George.
But, Gracie, in a little while, millions of people are going to tune into our program. And what are they going to hear? 30 minutes of silence.
Well, what's the difference if 1 week the program isn't quite as lively as usual?
Look, Gracie, don't you understand? One of our dearest friends is in a spot and he needs someone to go on his program.
Oh, I wish we were in California. The Beverly Hills Uplift Society All-Girl Symphony Orchestra would be glad to do the program.
That silly club of yours. Nobody is interested in those hens.
George Burns, that's no way to talk about your wife and your wife's friends.
Well, I didn't mean you, sweetheart.
Well, it's no way to talk about those other hens either.
Well, all right.
I'm going inside and practice an etude. Who knows? If it goes well, tomorrow I might try a B2.
Well, this is fine.
You said it.
Yeah. Come in.
George, listen. I hear you're going to do the Jack Benny show tonight.
Well,
Boy, I can't wait to read those commercials, George. Listen, that fat boy they've got announcing on that show is strictly from hunger.
Bill,
Listen, George, Benny only keeps him on because he can laugh.
Bill, say hello to Don Wilson.
Hello, Mr. Wilson. You've heard that fat boy on the Benny... Don Wilson! Oh, hello, Don.
So I'm known to you as Fat Boy, huh, Goodwin?
Oh, well, now, don't get sore, Don. I'm always making up nicknames for people. They never fit.
Well, I don't care about that, but what was that about my announcing?
Oh, nothing, Don, nothing at all. I think you're great. As a matter of fact, Don, I'd like to ask you a favor. You see, I thought maybe you could mention my product on the show tonight. You see, I sell one
I'm
of
not
the...
interested in what you sell.
Well, but, Don, it's purer than the...
I'm sorry, but there's no place that I can mention it.
No soap, huh? Okay, you win. So long, fat boy.
Well, Don, we're right back where we started.
George, now, why don't you go in and talk with your wife? Put your foot down.
You're darn right I will. I'll show her who's the boss.
Atta boy.
Gracie.
What do you want?
Well, sweetheart. You know that beautiful fur coat you saw in Bergdorf Goodman's?
You mean the one you said was too expensive for me?
Uh-huh. Well, I've got a little surprise for you. If you do the program tonight, that coat will be in your closet in the morning.
Well, if it isn't, we were robbed.
Well, fine.
Please, Gracie, now...
Now, I'm sorry, boys. You'll have to excuse me now. I've got to dip some spaghetti in ink.
You got to what?
I've got to dip some spaghetti in ink.
That's what I thought you said.
It's to fool our little dolly duck. You see, the hotel won't send up any worms.
So you got to dip spaghetti in ink? Come on, Don, let's get out of here.
Oh, come on, Herman. Dinner's almost ready. Ah-ha, here's Mama's little precious ducky. You know, Herman, your Daddy George is mad at me. But, Herman, dear, we mustn't be too annoyed with him. He has a kind heart. Oh, now, that's not fair, baby. He just doesn't realize that it's more important to capture a beautiful melody that comes from a soul than it is to get a big laugh that comes from... Well, never mind. We'll show him when we get to Carnegie Hall. Carnegie Hall? Well, that's where your mama's going to play her concert. Oh, I can see it now, Herman. It's time for my entrance. There's a tremendous fanfare of trumpets. Then I play my piece and I become the sensation of New York. Reporters will flock around me. I'll be the guest of honor at dozens of banquets. Oh, I probably won't be home for days. Oh, Mama didn't mean to make you cry. She'll always find time to be with her darling little baby. And your Daddy George will be so proud of me.
I do, Miss Burns. I'm Rochester.
Oh, hello, Rochester. I suppose you're looking for Mr. Wilson.
That's right, ma'am. I've been talking to Mr. Benny and... My, my, poultry.
Oh, Rochester. That's my little son, Herman.
Son?
Well, yes. Don't you think he looks like his daddy?
Don't believe I ever met the bird.
Oh, of course you have. I'm married to him.
You mean Mr. Burns is that duck's papa?
Uh-huh.
Oh, come now.
Well, I wish George was here, too. You'd notice the resemblance if you saw them both walking. Anyway, I think you two ought to be great friends. Herman, shake hands with Rochester.
I do, Mr. Herman. I've held many a drumstick, but that's the first one that ever withdrew voluntarily.
Rochester, I know he's dying to have a conversation with you. Go on, say something to him.
Is this practical?
Oh, sure. Go on.
Okay. Mr. Herman, what are you going to be doing Meatless Tuesday?
Oh, Rochester, he's busy on Tuesday. He always goes to Central Park. Would you like to take him for a walk in the park sometime?
You mean you trust me alone with that fat little rascal?
Oh, certainly. He wouldn't hurt you.
Vice versa don't trouble you none.
Oh, no. Well, Rochester, maybe you're silly to wait for Mr. Wilson. I'm not going on Mr. Benny's program anyhow.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yes, the piano is my whole life now. Do you play the piano, Rochester?
No, ma'am. I ain't familiar with ivories when they come in large groups.
Oh. Well, goodbye, Rochester. I must get back to my art. From now on, I intend to woo the muses. Terpsichore, Calliope, Schenectady.
Yes, sir. Well, Don, I think we ought to try it again.
Oh, no, George, I've got a headache.
So have I, but I wish I could get it to go on Jack's program. Come in.
Oh, hello, Dennis.
Gee, Mr. Wilson, you're going to catch it. Mr. Benny just called, and he's all excited because he hasn't heard from you.
Now, Dennis, there's nothing to worry about.
But I don't want Mr. Benny to get high blood pressure with my blood.
Now, just pull yourself together and say hello to George Burns. He's taking Jack's place tonight.
Hello, Dennis. How are you?
Ha, 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 ha!
What's funny?
Ha, 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 ha! You're a scream, Mr. Burns.
What's this anyway?
Aren't you taking Mr. Benny's place tonight?
What of it?
I was afraid if I didn't laugh, you'd twist my arm like Mr. Benny does.
Say, George, maybe Dennis can persuade Gracie to go on the show.
Dennis?
Sure, believe it or not, the little dope seems to have a way with women.
Gee, have I?
All right, go in and talk to Gracie. We'll find out.
Yes, sir. Hello, Miss Allen.
Oh, hello, Dennis.
Yes, ma'am. I'm supposed to ask you to be on Mr. Benny's program tonight.
Well, I won't do it.
I don't blame you, Miss Allen. Mr. Benny says some terrible things about your brother, Fred.
Oh, no. Fred's not my brother, Dennis. And please don't call me Miss Allen. I've been Mrs. Burns since one day years ago when a tall, handsome, charming man came along and pronounced George and me man and wife.
But, Mrs. Burns, if you have nothing against Mr. Benny personally, why won't you go on his program?
Well, I simply can't do it, Dennis. You see, I'm an intellectual, and Jack Benny is...
Isn't he, though?
Well, I'm glad you see my point. You must understand that we intellectuals care only for the finer things in life. You know, Shakespeare and Beethoven and Walter Pigeon.
Gee, I've always wanted to meet an intellectual, Mrs. Burns.
Well, how do?
How do? I'll bet you read lots of books, huh?
Oh, yes, Dennis. A day never goes by that I don't pick up a book to dust it, if nothing else.
You know something? I'm crazy about books, too.
Oh, really? Do you like Little Women?
Oh, sure, but I like books even better.
Well, so do I. And, Dennis, don't you just adore poetry?
Yeah.
Oh, I know most of Longfellow by heart. Can you ever forget the opening lines of Hiawatha?
Yeah.
Me too. You know what, Dennis? You're the first person I've ever met who's my intellectual equal.
I guess there aren't many of us.
Dennis, believe me, you are just being wasted on the Jack Benny program.
Yeah, wasted.
Imagine you singing.
Yeah, singing.
Why, you should be reading poetry.
Yeah, poetry. I'm crazy about poems.
Yeah, crazy.
I've always dreamed that someday I'd get up on Mr. Benny's program and recite If.
If he'd let you?
Oh, no, If by Kipling.
Oh, that's one of my favorites. How does it go?
I'll recite it for you. If you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet with triumph and disaster.
Oh, stop. Don't go on. It's too beautiful.
Gee, I'm sorry. I should have warned you that I was pretty heavenly.
Oh, Dennis, we must do... Oh, come in. Why, Tootsie Sagwell. Hello, Tootsie.
Oh, Gracie, I thought you were practicing, so I... Oh, does he belong to anybody?
Well, not yet, Tootsie. Dennis, I want you to meet my girlfriend, Tootsie Sagwell. Tootsie, Dennis Day.
Oh, my, what a gorgeous hunk of child. Hello, Dennis.
Hello, Miss Sagwell. Say, haven't I seen you someplace before?
Oh, isn't you?
Oh, Tootsie is as cultured as we are, Dennis. And she has a lovely singing voice.
Oh, I haven't.
I'd like to hear her sing sometime, Miss Sagwell. I'll bet you've got a lovely vibrato.
Oh, what he said!
Tootsie, Dennis is on Jack Benny's program, but he's very unhappy. You see, he's cultured like us.
Oh, I knew you were a kindred soul, Dennis. You have such a sensitive face.
I'll say, every month it kills me when I have to shave it.
Say, I just had a marvelous idea.
What, Gracie?
I will go on Jack Benny's program with you and Dennis.
Huh?
Well, we'll change the name of that show from the Grape Nuts Flake program to 30 Minutes of Refinement. I'll play the piano, Tootsie will sing, and Dennis will recite.
Oh, boy, now you're cooking with gas, if you'll pardon the expression.
I'll tell George. Oh, George!
Yeah?
George, I've changed my mind. I've decided to go on Jack Benny's program after all.
You mean it?
Yes.
Well, bless your heart. And now I'm going to get you that hat that goes with that fur coat.
You mean this one?
Yeah, that's the one. Come on, let's go to the studio.
Ready, everybody?
Yes, Don.
Yep, all set, Don.
Well, stand by. We'll be on the air in just a second. The Grape Nuts Flakes program.
That's enough, Don. Step aside, please.
Huh? Gracious. Wait a minute. He hasn't...
Ladies and gentlemen, we now present 30 Minutes of Refinement. Ready, Dennis and Tootsie?
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay.
All right, let's go.
If you can keep your head on all about it, if you can dress yourself warm and doubt it, if you can wait for it.
Honestly, Jack, I did the best I could. Good night, everybody.
If you can keep your head on all about it.
And Gracie will be right back, so I have just a moment to make this one request. Friends, for the sake of your loved ones in service, for the sake of your loved ones at home, give to the American Red Cross War Fund. The Red Cross works on every war front, giving skilled care, saving lives. The Red Cross stands by on the home front, ready to meet sudden danger. But the Red Cross must raise $125 million to carry on its good work. So do your part. Give and give generously to the American Red Cross War Fund. Now, here are George and Gracie.
Oh, good night, everybody. And Jack, hurry and get well.
And please send the muffler. Good night, folks.
Next week, when we'll be broadcasting from Hollywood with Mary Livingston, Dennis Day, Rochester, and yours truly, Don Wilson. The makers of Grape Nuts Flakes want to extend their sincerest thanks to George Burns and Gracie Allen for pinch-hitting for Jack Benny on tonight's show. George and Gracie were presented every Tuesday night over another network by the makers of Swan, the new white floating soap.
Life starts moving faster and faster. We need to make a choice to move faster with it or to step off every now and then to marvel at the wonders around us, to take in new sights and sounds, songs and experiences, and to just remember how beautiful life can be. Let's take a deep breath and remember that each Wednesday from 4 to 6 p.m. there's Afternoon Jazz with Mr. Jags. Basking in the middle of a Wednesday afternoon, a place where this season we can all savor the moment and take a deep breath of pure jazz. Your journey begins on 89.3 WHFR.
Every 2 minutes, a woman in the U.S. is diagnosed with breast cancer, and in that moment in time, her life changes forever. We're fighting alongside patients because we know one moment can change a lifetime.
Harold Perry as the Great Gildersleeve.
is a busy man, but he's never too busy to give advice to little Leroy, whether he asks for it or not. Today, Leroy's asking for it.
Hey, Unc, you got a minute?
Huh? Well, I have to get to the office, Leroy.
But I want to ask you about a business deal.
Business deal?
You're a sharp businessman.
Well, yes. What an intelligent little fellow. What's on your mind, Leroy?
Boss Callahan down the street wants me to take over his paper route. He'll give me half the profits.
Half the profits?
Sure. All I have to do is fold the papers and deliver them to the people.
And what does Buzz Callahan do?
He handles the details.
Details on a paper route? Oh, my goodness. You do need advice. Leroy, you don't want that job.
I don't?
Of course not. Buzz Callahan sits back and collects the money while you run your legs off? Use your head, Leroy, not your feet.
Oh, gosh, I'm just a little kid. My head isn't grown up yet.
Your head is just as good as anybody's. Don't forget, Leroy, you're my nephew.
Yeah.
The men of our family have always done well. We've been leaders, captains of industry. I use my head every day. How do you suppose I got to be water commissioner?
Political pull?
No, Leroy. It's because I did an efficient job. I proved I was capable of running the department. I knew how to get somebody else to do the work. I mean, I've got Bessie at the office, Charlie Anderson at the reservoir, and a meter reader. They all work for the water commissioner.
Yeah, but that's not helping me. I need some dough.
Well, you have your allowance, my boy.
Yeah, but it don't stretch far enough anymore. One movie and a couple of bubble gums and I'm busted.
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do then. Rather than see you working for Buzz Callahan, I'll give you 50 cents a week to mow the lawn.
50 cents a week?
You bet. And here it is, in advance.
Oh, boy, thanks, huh? I'm going right out and start mowing.
Now, wait a minute, Leroy.
Huh?
There you go, using your feet again. Haven't you gotten anything out of our little talk?
Sure. 50 cents.
Naturally, Leroy. But if you're going to use your head and be a businessman, you'd offer Buzz Callahan a quarter to mow the lawn and keep a quarter for yourself.
That's a keen idea. Gee, you're smart, Unc.
Well,
I bet there's nothing that you don't know.
Now, Leroy, there's probably a lot of things I don't know. Of course, I can't think of them right at the moment. To good management, Bessie.
It is?
You bet. I can stop, but the water keeps running. And I think I'll stop for a while. Now, let's see what we have to do. Bessie, what's on the calendar for today?
April 12th.
What?
And a quarter moon.
A quarter, oh my goodness. Bessie, I mean, do I have any appointments? Has anybody called?
Well, the phone was ringing when I came from the malt shop this morning.
Malt shop? Who was it, Bessie?
So I ran down the hall, and when I got to the door, it was locked, and the phone kept ringing, and I couldn't find my keys in my purse, and the phone rang and rang.
Hurry, Bessie, hurry.
Yes, sir. Well, I finally found my keys, and I got the door open, and I rushed inside while the phone kept ringing and ringing.
Bessie, who was it?
I don't know. They hung up.
Oh.
And then the phone rang again.
Bessie, I can't go through another phone call.
But this was Judge Hooker.
Oh, the judge?
Yes, he said to tell you he'd be by your house this evening. He said he wanted some advice.
Advice? Well, that's the second time this morning I've been asked for advice. It isn't even 10 o'clock yet.
Mr. Gildersleeve, will you give me some advice?
Of course, Bessie. What do you want to know?
Mr. Gildersleeve, every time I go to the malt shop, a tall, handsome man winks at me.
Oh? Well, what's your problem?
Should I wink back?
My advice, Bessie, is strictly about business.
Well, he winks at me during business hours.
What a secretary. Human sound to break the silence.
Gildy!
Oop. Still not a human sound. That's what the old goat wants. Hello, Judge.
Evening, Gilda. Can I have a little talk with you before dinner?
Of course, Horace. Come on in the house.
Thank you.
There you are.
Miss Gilda?
Yes, Bertie?
You've got to get rid of that old goat.
Bertie, he's here.
Well, you got to get rid of that old goat Leroy brought home.
Oh, Leroy's old goat. What's this?
Evening, Judge.
Evening, Bertie. What about Leroy, the goat?
That's what he's got, a goat. That's just what he's got.
Oh, but where did Leroy get a goat?
I don't know where he got it, but I know where it's got the goat.
Now, Bertie, don't get excited.
Mr. Gilsleeve, he ate every flower in the pansy bed.
What, Bertie?
And you ought to see my clothesline. That goat's got a goat.
Did he eat the clothesline too, Bertie?
No, sir, he didn't eat the clothesline.
Well, good.
He ate your socks off the clothesline.
Watch it, Judge.
That goat's into everything. That's the nosiest old goat I ever saw. That goat's got to go.
All right, Bertie.
Mr. Gilsleeve, you know what that goat's got to do?
Yes, Bertie.
That's right. That goat's got to go.
I gotta go, too. I'll be back in a minute, Judge. Leroy? Are you in there, Leroy?
Yeah, come on in.
Leroy, Bertie tells me you brought home a goat.
Yeah, king, huh?
Young man, that goat's got to go.
But
I know how you like animals, my boy, but this is going too far. He's already trampled our pansy bed and eaten my socks off the clothesline.
Just your old green ones, Unc. Maybe he thought they were big leaves.
Who ever heard of Argyle leaves, Leroy? You'll have to take that goat back where you got him, you understand?
Okay. Gosh, he's my first big business deal.
Business deal?
Sure, Unc. Remember you told me to use my head and hire Buzz Callahan to mow the lawn for half of what you pay me?
Well, yes.
Buzz wouldn't do it, so I bought a goat to eat the grass.
Eat the grass?
Sure. We're both businessmen, huh? You got Bessie and Uncle Charlie and the meter reader working for you, and I got the goat working for me.
But Leroy, a goat won't eat all that grass.
He will when he finishes the pansies.
Yep. Leroy, how much did you pay for that goat?
$3 on the installment plan.
Only $3 for a whole goat?
Yeah. For some reason, the man didn't want him around anymore.
Yeah. I can understand that.
Yeah. You're paying me 50 cents a week to cut the grass, and I pay the man a quarter a week for the goat. I clear a quarter, and the goat does all the work.
Say, that's pretty shrewd thinking of that.
But you deserve the credit, Unc.
I do.
You told me how to be a businessman.
Yeah, I guess I did.
So I can keep the goat, huh? I'm just a little kid.
Well, what's wrong with a little kid having a goat? Don't worry, I'll take care of it, my boy. Yes, sir. Hi, George, that boy has a head on his shoulders. Imagine buying a goat for only $3 on the installment plan. And no carrying charges. He's going to grow up to be just as smart as his old uncle.
Well, what's the verdict, Gilda?
Huh? Bertie got all upset about nothing, Horace. Leroy explained the whole thing to me. It's entirely possible that that goat was a very shrewd investment.
You mean you're going to keep the animal?
Yes, indeed. Come on out in the backyard, Judge. Let's have a look at him. Huh?
But, Gilda, why do you want a goat around the house?
He's going to mow the lawn, Judge.
Mow the lawn? A goat?
Certainly. He'll eat the grass. Little Leroy's idea.
I see.
Yeah, quite a boy. He's developing a great head for business. I'm helping him, of course. After you, Judge.
Thank you. I thought Bertie said the goat had to go.
Ah, Bertie will get used to him. After he eats the grass, maybe he'll eat the tin cans. Then Bertie won't have to carry him out on Tuesdays.
Goats do not eat tin cans, Gilda. That's a fallacy. They just like the paper labels and mucilage.
Well, you ought to know.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Wonder where he is. Oh, there he is, looking at us from behind the apple tree.
Yeah. Gilda, if you don't mind, I think I'll wait on the porch.
Oh, for it. All right, Judge. I'm going to get acquainted with him. Hello, goat. Wonder what his name is. Probably Billy. Hello, Billy. Yeah, it is Billy.
Now,
twitching his tail. Goat, don't look at me like that. Don't lower your head now. Now, Goat, Billy, you wouldn't want to butt me. I live here. I'm Leroy's uncle.
You take my advice, Billy. You run for it.
Well, maybe if I just back up slowly. Oh, brother, he's coming. I better run for it. Open the door, John.
It's open.
Gee, I made it. Door right down the middle. That goat's gotta go.
Yeah.
And you too, Josh.
The Great Gildersleeve will be with us again in just a minute. Yesterday, he was very proud when Leroy made his first business deal, the shrewd purchase of a $3 goat. Today, as our water commissioner wends his way homeward, he doesn't think so much of the deal.
Hard for me to tell little Leroy to get rid of the animal. After all, I told him not to take the paper out. Still, I can't have that goat chasing me every time I leave the house. Someday, my luck's going to run out. Yeah, look at that. Peavy has a new window display. Hot water bottles. Nice. Hello, Peavy.
Well, hello, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Nice window display you have, Peavy.
Well, I didn't know hot water bottles were that interesting.
Well, they are to me. Anything that plugs water, I'm for.
Well, I wouldn't sell a hot water bottle without a plug.
Oh, my goodness.
A little witticism, Mr. Gildersleeve. Plug in the hot water bottle?
I get it, Peavy.
What can I do for you this afternoon, Mr. Gildersleeve? Sell you a hot water bottle?
No, Peavy. Just stopped in on my way home. I'm going to get my car and take Catherine out to dinner.
Oh? I thought perhaps you were spending the evening at home with your goat.
What?
The judge was in.
Oh, yes, the judge. Well, it's not my goat, Peavy. It's Leroy's. It's becoming a real problem.
You don't say.
Every time I set foot out of the house, he chases me.
My. Has he caught you yet?
He's not going to either. He doesn't bother Leroy, nor Marjorie, nor Bertie. I can't understand why he goes after me.
Well, perhaps he considers you a better target.
Yeah.
Just an observation, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Well, something has got to be done about the creature.
When I was a boy, I had a goat, and I don't mind saying he had a lot of good qualities.
Really? Say, Peavy, I'll bet you'd like to buy this goat.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that.
Cheap? Free? Peavy, if I were to give him to you free, what would you say?
Nah.
Ooh.
Milford
to dinner this evening. That'll be just you and Marjorie and Leroy.
Yeah, me and Marjorie and Leroy and that no good goat.
Well, don't you worry about him, Bertie.
You know where I found him sleeping this morning, Mr. Gildersleeve?
I'm afraid to ask.
Up in Leroy's old pigeon roost.
What?
He climbs like a cat and he'll sleep any place. He's a no good goat.
Well, he's no friend of mine, Bertie.
No, sir. There's good goats and there's bad goats. He's a bad goat.
That's right, Bertie, but I've got to go now.
You going out through the backyard?
Yeah.
You want me to go with you?
No, I guess I'll make it all right. Thank you, Bertie. Thank you very much. See you later. Now, if I can just make it to the car without attracting that goat's attention. He doesn't seem to be around any place. So far, so good.
Have you seen Billy?
No, and he hasn't seen me.
Gosh, I can't find him.
Well, good.
I wonder if he jumped the
fence and ran away.
He might have. You know how goats are, Leroy. Here today and gone tomorrow, thank goodness.
But, Unc, he's my business investment. I've still got to pay for him.
Well, my boy, if he's disappeared, I'll pay for it. Gladly.
No kidding?
Absolutely, my boy.
Okay, he's disappeared.
All right, here's your $3. Is that right?
Well, I've been checking the prices on goats, Unc, and they just went up.
Oh, they did.
This one just went up 50 cents.
Yep. Well, I guess I'm buying a goat on the bull market. Yeah, but it's worth it, my boy. Here's your extra 50 cents.
Thanks, Unc. How am I doing in business?
Yeah, better than I am. Gotta get out of here while I've got enough money left to take Catherine to dinner. Leroy, who left this car door open?
I guess I did. Remember last night when you made a run for the back porch? I had to go out and turn off the ignition.
Yes. Well, goodbye, my boy.
Bye.
Wonder where that darn goat went to. Where would I go if I were a goat? Nah, he wouldn't go there. Well, he's gone. That's all that matters.
Bring him in the yard, and I'll get my purse. Oh, boy, another $3.
I should have been in business long ago.
We'll close the gate so we can't get out.
Oh, this is awfully nice of you, Mrs. Milford. Uncle appreciated it.
I'm glad to do it. I like to do nice things for Mr. Gildersleeve.
Stewart saying goodnight for the Kraft Foods Company, makers of the
Kraft quality food products. Be sure to listen in next Wednesday and every Wednesday for the further adventures of the Great Gildersleeve.
All right, you'll be glad you did. Good night, folks.
Of Break the Bank on NBC.
Hey, Mama, you seen him, you dug him. Now here he is with the beat that's sweet and the jive that's alive. Your very own muchacho.
Remember, a pretty girl is like a melody, but get three or four tunes playing at once, you can go crazy, yeah.
And these disc jockeys, they hear the tone that is different.
But don't control.
Come join the White Rabbit on the Hot Wax Radio every Sunday from 7 to 9 in the p.m. here at the station that's making waves, WHFI Dearborn.
My Shiro doesn't always wear a cape, but she always has time for a hug, a smile, for going the extra mile. My Shiro stretches every dollar, puts in long hours, puts others first. But now it's your time, Mom. When you're ready to retire, we want you to be able to enjoy it. Get free tips to help boost your retirement savings now at aceyourretirement.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
All right. Great Gildersleeve there from April 12 of 1950. Walter Tetley played Leroy, as you heard. That was actually, Walter Tetley was an adult actor. And he had a high voice because he had some kind of a medical condition that prevented his voice from ever changing, so he always sounded like a little kid, Leroy, or another character he played on Phil Harris and Alice Faye, called Julius, was also a little kid. But there you have it, Great Gildersleeve, Walter Tetley, Harold Perry, better known as the Fago guy, and a host of others. In case you're joining us, this is Radio Vault, your place to be every Tuesday between 10 in the morning and 1 o'clock. Up and coming next, we are going to take a listen to the Fred Allen Show. I wanted to feature this during our middle hour, and we're going to do that right now. Texaco Star Theater from 1942. Fred Allen, who is Jack Benny's arch enemy, at least that's what they portrayed. In reality, they were good friends, Jack Benny and Fred Allen. In the meantime, being that it is 11 o'clock, you are listening to listener-supported radio, non-commercial radio, from Henry Ford College, WHFR Dearborn, 89.3 and WHFR.FM. I think we're ready now to go and continue with our next feature from April 5th, 1942. Now, this show is a little bit scratchy, so we apologize for that. But remember, these shows survived to the present day on very large 16-inch, I guess you could call them vinyl, although they were made out of whatever, 16-inch records. And this one was a little scratchy, but you'll enjoy it anyway. Fred Allen in the Texaco Star Theater.
It's Texaco Time with Fred Allen. Welcome to the Texaco Star Theater, ladies and gentlemen, and to a performance that marked a milestone in Texaco history, the 40th anniversary of the Texas Company. Tonight, we invite you to enjoy the next 60 minutes with Fred Allen, Kenny Baker, Portland Hopper, our special guest, Victor Moore, star of Paramount's Louisiana Purchase, the winner of the Texaco College Competition, Miss Charlene Posge from Duquesne University at Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and Al Goodman's orchestra. An hour of mirth and melody brought to you by the more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast. Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to meet the man who appeared on the Quiz Kids program last Wednesday and learned a lot of things his mummy never done told him. And here he is, Fred Allen in person.
Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And, Jimmy, when you say I learned a lot of things from the Quiz Kids last Wednesday night, you are not exaggerating. Do you know that little Gerard is so smart, he has to sleep with his head between bookends? Little head is square up on top. I asked him, and he told me he sleeps.
No kidding, is that right?
Yes, that's right. All the kids agreed, though, Jimmy, that I was the most intelligent guest they had ever had on the program.
Oh, yes, I know. They told the same thing to Jack Benny when he was on their program last year.
Oh, that's ridiculous, Jimmy. Benny had, when Benny went on the Quiz Kids program, he cheated. Benny had Einstein under his coat, one of the kids. And the reason they knew that he had Einstein under there was that all of the answers during the program, all of Benny's answers came out of a buttonhole in his vest. And they looked in there. They thought he had hair on his chest, but it was Einstein in there. Speaking of J.B., did you hear his program tonight, Jimmy?
No, I didn't, Fred. What happened?
You didn't hear the program? No. Well, the program opened up at a fast clip, Jimmy. Oh. Don Wilson came on and spoke highly, at a fast clip about cola jello. The program was very good up to there. And then, of course, Benny came on, and there was a letdown after the commercial, naturally. Benny came on and told how his suspenders broke in the Easter parade out there in Hollywood, and his trousers were lowered to half-mast, you see. And it seems that that he had on the bloomers from Charlie's aunt, from the picture. He was still wearing these bloomers, you see. It must be very funny, because on a man like Benny, it's hard to tell where a bloomer starts, where a bloomer leaves off and Benny starts. I mean... But he has to wear... Did you ever see Benny's legs, confidentially?
No, frankly, I haven't.
You haven't?
No.
Well, they look like two swan's necks with no down on them. Benny is the first man to ever wear stockings with built-in calves. He is the inventor with the built-in calves. Well, then the program went along. I made some notes here. He spoke disparagingly about my appearance with the Quiz Kids. He said that when he was on the program, he sat right with the kids and answered the questions, and I was the quiz master. Well, the truth of the matter is that on the program, the kids wanted Benny to be the quiz master, but when he got over there, they found out that he couldn't read the questions, so they had to take him and put them with him to... And then later on, he did a whole routine about that I had no teeth, you see. Yes. Mr. Benny said that I had no teeth at all. And now to fling the lie into Mr. Benny's gums at the moment, to prove, ladies and gentlemen, from here to California that I have teeth, I am going to eat over this network from coast to coast a piece of celery, ladies and gentlemen. Now, Mr. Benny, let's hear from you. Well, that's about all there was. There is a man, sir, Jimmy. Benny not only has no teeth of his own, he's too cheap to buy false teeth. He enamels his gums. That's about all there was to the program, Jimmy. I guess you're sorry you brought the whole thing up.
Yes, frankly, I am. I only mentioned Jack Benny to make conversation.
Well, I know. And before you get a chance to say anything more, Jimmy, I think I'd better turn to the latest news of the week. The March of Trivia presents its weekly lowlight from the world of news. Washington, D.C., War Production Board, in an effort to stretch the nation's available tea supply to 1 year's consumption, orders 50% cut in the sale of tea to the public. March of Trivia gets a cross-section of the man in the street opinion to drastic tea reduction order. An ex-senator says,
I'm framing a bill to take the tea out of the alphabet.
Are you putting another letter in its place?
Yes, the letter V. V for victory.
Well, how will your victory alphabet go, Senator?
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, V, U, V, W, X, Y, Z.
Very good. Thank you, Senator. The hostess at a popular Park Avenue tea shop reports,
we have stopped serving tea entirely.
You are serving a substitute?
Tea customers are now getting a cup of hot water and smoked glasses.
Thank you very much. A popular songwriter says,
I'm rewriting the lyrics of Tea for Two. I'm cutting down 50%.
Well, how does your new version of Tea for Two go?
A tea for one and one for tea. No tea for you, but there's tea for me.
Thank you very much. An unknown actor... An unknown actor who has been affected by the tea reduction is Sir Beerbohm Bush. Well, what happened, Sir Beerbohm?
This blasted tea rationing has closed my play. Lord Bellwether's Dilemma.
Lord Bellwether's Dilemma? Well, how could tea...
Well, you see, in the play, I was cast as Cartwright the Butler.
Cartwright the Butler?
Yes. At the end of the third act, Lord Bellwether returns, you see. He's been out on the moor, frogging.
Frogging on the moor, eh?
But as Lord Bellwether enters the conservatory, he finds the governess beheaded on the divan, his wife dying on the floor, and his son lying on the mantel with a bolo knife through his pullover.
A bolo knife through his pullover, eh?
Mm. Lord Bellwether adjusts his monocle.
Yes.
He calmly surveys the carnage.
Yes.
He turns to me and he says, Cartwright... A cup of tea.
Cartwright, a cup of tea.
Yes, I serve him the tea. Quick curtain. Bravos, applause, absolute dinner, boy.
Fine.
And then came this blasted tea rationing. At the last minute, I had to find another drink. I made a most unfortunate choice.
Well, what happened, Sir Beerbohm?
We came to the third act.
Yes.
Lord Bellwether said, Cartwright, a cup of tea.
Yes.
I came on holding a Pepsi Cola.
And?
The house cat called. Quick curtain. The play closed.
Well, that's too bad, Sir Beerbohm.
I say, oh, boy, do you mind if I trickle off?
Not at all.
Trickle, 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 trickle.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Sir Beerbohm. A mystic who has had a bit of difficulty with the tea, a theorist, rather, who has had a bit of difficulty with the tea situation is, what is your name again, madam?
Princess Shirley Lazanga.
Princess, you tinker with the tannic occult, do you, Princess Lazanga?
For 20 years, by Shapiro Samovar, I am reading tea leaves.
Shapiro Samovar. Well, do you tell fortunes by appointment, Princess?
Only with the blue plate special.
Oh, I see.
With the 35-cent dinner, I am telling you nothing. Princess Lazanga is only waiting on you.
Oh, only waiting with the... Well, but with the blue plate special...
While you are eating the meat, I am looking into the future.
Uh-huh, and?
I am not only predicting dessert, I am also predicting love, marriage, and divorce.
Fine. Well, tell me, with the tea rationing, are you giving digest readings?
Princess Shirley Lazanga is going all out.
All out for defense?
All out of Shapiro Samovars.
Oh, I see.
Yes, today I am predicting by Moskowitz's delicatessen.
You are a fortune teller in a delicatessen?
Why not? I am reading noodles.
Well, how on earth can you read noodles?
Comes a customer. He is ordering noodle soup.
Mm-hmm.
The soup off the top he is zipping.
Mm-hmm.
I am looking on the noodles and giving a reading.
Well, isn't it difficult reading noodles?
It's monotonous. Every fortune is the same.
Why, Princess?
For a customer eating by Moskowitz's delicatessen, their future is holding only one thing.
Success?
Indigestion.
Moskowitz cramps their style, and thank you, Princess Lazonga. And now a man who has no problem with the tea rationing is Ladislaus Franz. Tea doesn't bother you, eh, Ladislaus?
Not me, brother. Let them cut out all the drinks they want. I'm all set.
You don't drink anything?
Only milk, brother. I bought a cow.
Do you live in the city? Where do you keep your cow?
Where else? In the apartment.
You keep a cow?
The landlord's nearsighted. He thinks it's a St. Bernard with gland trouble.
Oh.
When me and a wife is like a glass of milk, I just pull one of them little handles under the cow, we got milk.
And this system is working out okay, is it?
We got more milk than we can use in a lifetime.
Well, how do you mean?
For 2 months, I've been drawing from only one of them little handles under the cow.
I see.
The other three are as good as new.
Oh, the other three. You're holding your cow for a long pull, and thank you, Ladislaus. Well, that about exhausts...
Hark an instant, mountebank. Falstaff's here to cut a plank.
Falstaff, Openshaw, not you.
The muse and I have just checked out of the Y.
By request. You haven't been composing again.
Have you heard, she had dishpan hands, and I was a Basin Street boy?
No, I haven't.
Or, I waved to my darling Beulah as they dragged her away to the cooler.
No, I haven't heard that.
Put down that jukebox, mother. You're too old to carry a tune.
Now, wait a minute. Done it. That is the last straw, Openshaw. Tonight, it so happens that we have been discussing the tea shortage.
Precisely why I am here. I have written a poem.
What is your tea poem called?
My Little Bag and Me.
How does it go, Falstaff?
When the cares of the day seem too heavy to bear, do I rant, do I fume, do I tear out my hair? No. I hie me to a tea shop, to the nearest one I go, and I get myself a pot of tea, oolong, or perhaps Pekoe. I pour my own hot water, I dunk my bag of tea, and there I sit in solitude, my little bag and me. Through many a crucial crisis, when fate had us up a tree, we've sat and thrashed our problems out, my little bag and me. But today there came an order from the WPB. It says we all must cut in half our daily use of tea. It means breaking up our friendship to keep our country free. We're glad to make this sacrifice, my little bag and me.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. And now, ladies and gentlemen, and now we turn to greet Kenny Baker, paying his tribute to the Easter season. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight Kenny sings Easter Parade, Mr. Al Goodman conducting Easter Parade.
You'll be the grandest lady in the Easter parade. I'll be all in clover, and when they look you over, I'll be the proudest fellow in the Easter parade. On the avenue, Fifth Avenue, the photographers will snap us, and you'll find that you're in the rose gravure. I could write a sonnet about your Easter bonnet and of the girl I'm taking to the Easter parade. Never saw you look quite so pretty before. Never saw you dressed quite so lovely. What's more, I could hardly wait to keep our day this lovely Easter morning. And my heart beat faster as I came through the door. In your Easter bonnet, with all the frills upon it, you'll be the grandest lady in the Easter parade. I could write a sonnet about your Easter bonnet and of the girl I'm taking to the
my eyes deceive me, is Larry Elliott.
Yes, Fred, with a message for the millions of new drivers in America today.
Oh, wait a minute, Larry. How can there be millions of new drivers when there aren't any new cars?
Why, every motorist is a new driver now, Fred, even those who've been driving for years.
Well, I think you'd better explain that, Larry.
Well, it's very simple, Fred. We're all new drivers these days because we're all driving in new ways. We're staying under 40, we're conserving our tires, and we're looking for new efficiency in the performance of our cars. That's why motorists appreciate now more than ever the satisfaction of driving with Texaco Sky Chief gasoline. Try it yourself. Feel the new life Sky Chief's flexible power puts into your car at those under 40 speeds. Thrill to the way this luxury gasoline answers your touch on the starter, the way its flexible power eases you into smooth, steady, tire-saving starts. Sky Chief won its fame as the nearest thing to flying power in ground travel. But you don't have to speed to enjoy the brilliant performance of Sky Chief's flexible power. And you only have to count your miles per gallon to know its real economy, too. Yes, you'll get a new satisfaction from your driving with Sky Chief, your Texaco dealer's premium gasoline for those who want the best.
Maestro Goodman has just played Zoot Suit. Mr. Goodman only had time to play a fragment of the cloth. We're a little rushed tonight. And
Mr. Allen!
Well, Portland. Hey, you look mighty snappy tonight. Is that your new Easter outfit?
Yes, it's a victory ensemble.
Well, how do you mean?
The dress is so long, you can't see defeat.
Well, I could say very good, but I'd only be lying, so I'm not going to say very good. Auntie Very is a word that could be used in connection with another word that might go after it. Aren't the sleeves a little too long?
Yes. The mom didn't have time to alter the dress.
Why not?
Just as Mama paid him, a policeman came up, and the man had to leave with his push cart.
A push cart modiste? Is that where you did your shopping?
The man told Mama he was working for Macy's.
And he had a push cart full of dresses?
Yes. He said he was a fresh air fiend, and Macy's let him take his counter out in the street.
Oh, yes. They're very nice that way if you want to take your counter out. Well, he should have shortened the sleeves.
Oh, the sleeves are all right. My arms aren't long enough.
Well, you can get them pulled out later in the day. Well, oh, hello, Kenny. I didn't see
well,
you.
Well, how do you like it, folks?
Oh, is that your new suit, Kenny?
Yes, sir. Some garment, AFA?
Now, wait a minute. Wait till I get used to the glare, Kenny. You blinded me there for a minute.
It looks like a sunset with sleeves in it, doesn't it?
It sure is loud, Kenny.
It looks like an antipasto with lapels on it to me.
Where did you get your suit, Kenny?
Well, I was walking along Canal Street, and a man was lying outside of a clothing store. He must have fainted because he was mumbling.
Mumbling what, Kenny?
Well, he was mumbling, "Help, help, carry me into Sam's Tailor Shop, now having a big Easter sale." Down come prices. No suit in stock, over $16.95. Hurry, carry me in.
And?
Well, he was lying on the sidewalk, so I carried him in.
So?
The minute I got him inside Sam's, he came to and locked the door. And who do you think it was?
Who, Kenny?
It was Sam.
Well, what happened?
Well, the next thing I knew, I was pinned against the wall looking at suits.
Well, how did you happen to pick that slice of Technicolor you have on there?
I got a canoe paddle with it.
Oh, well... All right, break it up, kids. We have a guest to welcome.
Oh, who's coming tonight?
Victor Mature.
Oh! Victor Mature!
Now, stop shaking, Portland. We went all through this with Tyrone Power. Now, you and Kenny beat it. Mr. Mature and I want to be alone.
Gosh, I'd like to be you for 10 minutes, Mr. Allen.
Well, never mind that. Go and see if the bulb on your Easter lily lights up. Do something. And now... Now, ladies and gentlemen, 3 weeks ago we brought you Tyrone Power. Tonight we bring you another candidate for the movie fan's choice for Mr. America, Hollywood's one and only Victor Mature. Brother, we were expecting someone all women describe as a beautiful hunk of man.
Well, nobody ever called me beautiful, but I guess you could call me a hunk.
Yes, you could. You look like a bundle for Bellevue. You're certainly not Victor Mature.
No, I'm Victor Moore.
Victor Moore. You see, we had the same trouble here 2 weeks ago. We were expecting the Quiz Kids and Reggie Gardner showed up. Tonight we're expecting Victor Mature. We get Victor Moore.
What has Victor Mature got that I haven't got?
Well, nothing, but somehow he has it better arranged. Victor Mature has a wasp waist.
Well, what's wrong with this sunken double chin I've got here?
It looks like you rolled out the barrel and then put a vest on it.
Well, I'm sorry if I won't do, now, Mr. Holland.
Wait. Oh, please, Mr. Moore, don't go. We've got to have a guest star tonight.
Well, do you think you can use me?
Well, you'll be better than nothing.
That's what the man at the draft board said this morning.
What were you doing at the draft board?
The man on the door had his glasses off, and he pulled me in.
Well, what happened when you got inside?
He put on his glasses and threw me out.
Well, this is all mighty interesting, Mr. Guest, tonight. We'll have... Now, what could I ask you?
If I was born...
That's a little late. Then that's an interview.
Well, why don't you ask the leading question?
Well, how...
Well, as a young boy... Door.
Yes.
I went in.
Yes.
I then.
Yes. What happened then?
Everything went black. Everything went black.
And when you came to?
Everything was still black. I was with a minstrel show.
Well, what happened when you washed up?
I played in vaudeville for 30 years.
And after 30 years in vaudeville, what did you have?
A tight tuxedo.
What did you have?
A tight tuxedo, a pair of spats, and
malnutrition came Broadway. And your hit shows of the art...
That's right. And of the art thing, I was Vice President Alexander Follobottom.
Well, after years, what is your opinion of the office?
It's oblivion with all expenses.
Well, what were some of your other roles?
Well, and leave it to me, I was ambassador to Russia. I got out of Russia in 1940.
Well, a certain paper hanger probably wishes he had gotten out with you, I imagine. Your last show was Louisiana Purchase. You were a senator in that.
That's right. I've been a senator, an ambassador, and a vice president.
You've had quite a political career on the stage.
Yes. Other actors audition for parts. I have to campaign for mine.
Well, doesn't it get monotonous, Vic, playing nothing but politician parts?
You bet it does. Someday I'd like to play a romantic part. Just once, I'd like to wear a sweater.
A sweater? Aren't you stretching your imagination a little?
I'd probably stretch the sweater a little, too. But I'd sure like to pull the wool over my eyes.
Well, perhaps you'll get your wish. You know, the way they do things out in Hollywood, Vic, you'll probably end up in a sarong.
I don't think so, Fred.
Why not?
People might mistake me for mature, but not Lemur.
Well, tell me, how did you like Hollywood when you were out there making Louisiana Purchase at Paramount?
Well, I found out one thing in Hollywood, Fred.
What?
I'm too fat to wear slats.
Well, why?
Men were always coming up behind me and saying, "Pardon me, sister."
Tell me, Vic, did you live lavishly out there in Hollywood? Did you live like Orson Welles, you know? 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 Fawns roaming around the living room and live elephants for bookends?
No, I lived simply just 20 servants and a xylophone player to work the doorbell.
Did you have a big house with a game warden at every mouse hole?
No, I just had one of those little bungalows. The backyard was a racetrack.
Oh. You had a swimming pool, of course.
Oh, I had a little puddle out the back of the house. Well, I was afraid to use it.
Well, why?
The Navy had it mined.
Well, now, I don't like to bring this up, Vic, but while you were out in Hollywood, were you set upon by any of the glamour girls?
Well, I hate to brag, Fred.
I thought so. You had an affair or two, you sly boots.
What
happened?
Well, the first day I was in Hollywood, I was sitting in the Brown Derby.
Yes.
And a strange woman tried to pay for my lunch.
A strange woman tried to pay for your lunch?
Yeah, and she got away with it, too.
What did you do?
Well, you know how it is. I had a station wagon, and her feet were sore.
And?
Well, one thing led to me taking her home.
What did you do when you delivered her home?
I got her a seat.
Did you ever see her again?
Oh, yes. Finally started keeping company.
Well, tell me, how serious did it get?
Well, she let me wear her Wilkie button. I let her wear my elk suit.
You did, huh? Well, who was this girl, Vic? Rita Hayworth?
No. It was Edna Mae Oliver.
So you and Edna Mae Oliver were that way, hey?
Yeah, we kicked it around a little while I was out there.
Did you hit zeros in all of the high spots?
No, the air conditioning brings on Edna May's arthritis.
Well, what did you two do for excitement?
Well, some nights I'd go over to Edna May's with my Parcheesi board.
Yes.
And some nights she'd bring her knitting over to my place. The light was better.
Oh, the light was better, sure. I see.
I'd heat up a little Ovaltine.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd take our shoes off and bump toes.
Puppy love. Well, I hope you and Edna May will be very happy.
I don't know. John Barrymore tells me she's fickle. But love will find a way.
Oh, how true. Well, now that you're back in New York, you're going to stay a while?
No, Fred, I got to go back to Hollywood.
You mean you can't resist that California climate? Is that it?
No, there's nothing like New York climate for me.
I know. You've got to get back because you like pictures.
No, there's nothing like the New York stage.
Is it the people out there?
No, give me New Yorkers every time.
Then what has Hollywood got that New York hasn't got? Well, oh, how true. Well, now that you're back in New York, you're going to stay a while?
No, Fred, I got to go back to Hollywood.
You mean you can't resist that California climate? Is that it?
No, there's nothing like New York climate for me.
I know. You've got to get back because you like pictures.
No, there's nothing like the New York stage.
Is it the people out there?
No, give me New Yorkers every time.
Then what has Hollywood got that New York hasn't got?
Edna Mae Oliver.
That's right, I forgot. The glamorous, effervescent Miss Oliver.
Gosh, Fred, the way you say it.
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Moore. The telephone. Hello? Yes? Yes, he's here. Oh, it's for you, Mr. Moore.
For me?
Yes.
Oh, hello? Oh. You just got into town, huh? You want me to go out and cut a rug? Okay, sugar. I'll meet you in front of the Stork Club. I'll be wearing my patent leather wedgies. The Vi-Hot stuff.
Vic, you're not stepping out tonight.
Say, you won't mention anything to Edna May, will you?
Your secret is safe with me, Vic. Who is she? Oh, come on. Who is this hot bundle you're taking out tonight?
May Robeson.
May? Thank you. And now, ladies and gentlemen, ever since Kenny Baker has been on the air, it has been his custom each Easter to pay fitting tribute to the day by singing Schubert's Ave Maria. Tonight, as Easter Sunday comes to a close, we are happy to again present Kenny Baker singing for you Ave Maria.
Ave Maria.
Did you want something?
Yes, it's time for me to do my stuff, Fred.
Well, not yet, Jimmy, or 8 minutes early.
Oh, your watch must be wrong, Fred.
Well, I had the jeweler take it apart and clean it only yesterday.
Maybe put the wrong parts back. Let me see it, will you? Well, these hands are the same. The dial is the same. Ah, here's the trouble. This spring is different.
Jimmy, how can you tell from the outside that this spring is different?
Texaco Star Theater continues in just a moment when Fred Allen returns to present Victor Moore and this week's winner in the Texaco College Talent Competition. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
WABC, New York.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, the curtain of the Texaco Star Theater rises on the most talented undergraduate selected by the student body of one of America's great institutions of higher learning. Tonight's winner, who has come to New York with all expenses paid, plus a cash award of $200, represents Duquesne University at Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Now, Fred, are you ready to do the honors?
Yes, Larry. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to have you meet Duquesne's most talented undergraduate, Miss Charlene Patricia Hosgay.
Well,
Congratulations, Charlene. And from Hallow Duquesne, we welcome you to our high-octane midst here.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. It's nice to be back in New York again.
Well, I'm glad that you have been here before, Charlene.
Why, Mr. Allen?
Well, most of our student winners are visiting Manhattan for the first time. And, of course, I generally ask them about their sightseeing. But you've seen everything here, I imagine. And so tonight, then, you can tell us about Pittsburgh. What is Pittsburgh like, Charlene?
It's a wonderful city, Mr. Allen. The Duquesne campus overlooks Pittsburgh's famous Golden Triangle. In the distance, you can see the Monongahela and Ohio Rivers.
You can see that far in Pittsburgh?
Sure, why not?
Why, I thought the air in Pittsburgh was so smoky, when the sun came out, it looked like the eight ball. I have even heard that the ceiling was so low in Pittsburgh, the little boys on pogo sticks were grounded most of the time.
Someone has been exaggerating, Mr. Allen.
Well, I'm only,
my freshman year. I'm taking...
Freshman seniors.
I guess I'm...
Lucky, Charlene.
Well, the contestants were drafted. And another one of the boys got a job playing with Stokowski.
Stokowski? Yes, Charlene, they were... Stokowski, you know how Mr. Goodman here used to play with Stokowski?
Really?
Mr. Goodman played leapfrog. If you see today, Stokowski has 200 musicians and he acts with his hands. Mr. Goodman relatives with instruments here. He can't get them to
become a concert arrangement.
You are studying musical education, Charlene. Do you want to teach music, Charlene? Do you want to teach music to be realized, Charlene?
Thanks.
Our team last year, didn't it?
Yes, last fall, Coach Dinelli made it Wednesday night.
Uh-huh.
It's games on Saturday.
I get it. You have to take two beatings and one little thing against me.
Oh, no, present you with this Duquesne monogram sweater from our monogram.
Oh, a sweater, and it's beautiful, Charlene. Uncle Jim looks like Bloomingdale's basement here. Now, just hold it up. Well, this is going to be fine. I know you don't play football, Charlene. What activities do you participate in about the campus?
I'm one of the singers in the Duquesne Tamburitza Orchestra.
Tamburitza? I've heard of the Schnickel Fritz Band. What is a Tamburitza Orchestra? What is a Tamburitza Orchestra? What is a Tamburitza Orchestra? What is a Tamburitza Orchestra?
Our orchestra plays the music of the Slovenian and Croatian people.
And the Tamburitza is the authentic instrument?
Yes, Mr. Allen. And the Duquesne Tamburitza Orchestra wants you to have this Tamburitza as a gift.
Well, that's very nice. Thank you, Charlene.
Incidentally, Mr. Allen, the Tamburitza Orchestra is playing in South Chicago tonight, and they stopped their program to listen to your...
Well, I wish I had time to play the Tamburitza for them tonight, Charlene. This looks like a mandolin that never had a chance, doesn't it? I'd like to stop and play Deep in the Heart of Texas, but I'd only take it off the hit parade, so I won't bother with it. Would you like to have me play for your song? I'll get my pick, Charlene.
Well, before I sing, Mr. Allen, could I talk to Portland?
Why, certainly. Portland?
Yes?
Charlene wishes a word with you.
Yes, Charlene? Portland, on behalf of the Duquesne chapter of the Future Teachers of America, I would like to present you with this key and scroll of membership and this bouquet of flowers.
Thank you. I am greatly honored, Charlene.
Charlene, you are really Lady Bountiful tonight. A sweater, a tamburitza, and now you've made Portland a future teacher. Posterity will be a race of morons, I'm afraid. Uncle Jim should have been born an octopus. I mean, you don't realize what you have done tonight.
I have one more gift for you, Mr. Allen. This is from the Epsilon Eta Phi fraternity.
Gosh, a basket with two Easter eggs in it. Isn't that? Look at that.
Yes, the large egg is inscribed to you.
Oh, so it is. That's swell.
The same egg also has an... The small egg also has an inscription.
Ah, yes. Let me see. This egg laid in Waukegan by... This is a museum piece, Charlene. And I want to thank you, the Duquesne Monogram Club, and the Epsilon Eta Phi Fraternity for your kindness tonight.
And I want to thank the Duquesne Chapter of Future Teachers, too, Charlene.
And I guess that brings us to your vocal presence, Charlene. What song have you brought us as your gift?
I'd like to sing A Heart That's Free.
Fine. Ladies and gentlemen, Duquesne University's most talented undergraduate, Miss Charlene Posgay, sings A Heart That's Free.
And the thing that I sing is the song of a heart that's free.
Fellow students, the faculty, and the Duquesne University alumni may well be proud of your appearance here tonight. And all of us here in the Texaco Star Theater wish you every success in your musical career. Now, next week, ladies and gentlemen, the most talented undergraduate of Buffalo University at Buffalo, New York. After hearing the three finalists over station WKBW in Buffalo, the student body voted, the ballots have just been tabulated, and the winner is Dean Stathicus. Congratulations, Gene. We'll be looking for you next Sunday night. And, oh, say, Kenny, you look upset. Anything?
Yes, I'm worried about my Aunt Maggie.
Oh, has she had an accident?
Well, not yet, but my uncle's going to tie my Aunt Maggie onto the fender of his car.
The fender of his car for what?
Save tires. My uncle says the wear on each tire is different, see? And Aunt Maggie weighs 300 pounds, so he's going to have a ride over each wheel in rotation until the five tires wear even.
Or your Aunt Maggie needs a retread job. Well, look, Kenny, tell your uncle he can't equalize his tire wear by guesswork. Isn't that correct, Jimmy? And now the Texaco Workshop players. Tonight they star Mr. Victor Moore in a burlesque of one of radio's great institutions, the Free Advice Program. This epic is called Forum for the Forlorn or Sobby Lobby.
Good evening. Forum for the Forlorn is conducted by radio's beloved advisor on personal problems, Rodney Allen. And here is the man who will solve each and every problem. That's Solomon of Sorrow, radio's mother, father, brother, and sister, Rodney Allen.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you. And good evening, friends. Tonight, again, our studio is crowded with frustrated little people from all walks of life who are here to tell us their problems entirely unrehearsed. And now, our first case.
906, this young lady, Mr. Allen.
And your case, sister. Open your shawl, sister. Let me hold that safety pin. There, that's better. Now that your shawl is open, sister, open your heart.
In love with two fellas.
And,
What is your problem, 906?
Well, I got $200.
And you are madly in love with two fellows?
Yeah. One fella is a racing trout.
Racing fella?
He wants me to lend him the $200 to play a horse.
Well, what about your other friend?
The other fella is a part-time felon.
Mm-hmm.
He's in jail.
And this part-time felon?
He wants me to take my $200 and go his bail.
And you're madly in love with both of these fellows?
Yeah, that's my problem. What should I do with my $200?
My advice to you, little lady, is to give your $200 to the horse player. Let him put it on a horse. If the horse wins, you will have enough money to bail out your other boyfriend.
But what if the horse loses?
You will have another problem. I shall be happy to settle that problem for you.
Mr. Allen.
Yes, Milton?
This next gentleman in line has no number.
This bewildered-looking character wearing the burlap pajamas, the seersucker bathrobe, and the birch bark moccasins?
Yes.
Pardon me, sir.
Who am I? I must be somebody. What's my name?
Well, I'm going to try to help you, brother.
Who am I?
We'll find out who you are.
Have you ever seen me before?
No.
Then how do you know it's me?
Well, I don't. I'm taking a chance. Who are you?
That's it. Who am I? I must be somebody.
It looks like an amnesia victim, Rodney.
Yes, if we only had a clue, Milton. Brother, can't you give us some clue?
Is there any fire coming out of my head?
No.
Then I can't be Superman.
No. You don't even look like Clark Kent. Now, if you'll just sit down, I'll help you after the program.
Right this way, sir.
But who am I? I must be someone.
Friends, this poor unfortunate character has wandered into our forum for the forlorn wearing burlap pajamas, a seersucker bathrobe, and birch bark moccasins. You may recognize that timid voice. If you do, please call this studio. And now...
Case number 804.
Yes, beaten one. What is your dilemma?
I formerly worked in a bank. I got $18 a week, and I wasn't happy.
Why? Why weren't you happy?
On $18 a week, I couldn't go no place. I couldn't do nothing.
This made you unhappy?
Yes, sir.
Proceed.
One day, I stole $87,000 from the bank. And I quit my job.
I see.
Today, I'm out all day going to the racetrack, playing bingo. Nights, I'm catching shows, going to nightclubs.
And are you happy?
I'm happy while I'm enjoying myself. But when I go home at night to my duplex...
Yes?
I get to thinking about the $87,000. My conscience bothers me and I'm unhappy.
And your problem is?
Should I go on enjoying myself with this tainted money and be an unhappy part of the time?
Yes.
Or should I go back to work in a bank and be unhappy all of the time?
There is no substitute for honesty, son, and my advice to you is to give up this life of pampered luxury and ease.
Yes, sir.
Go back to that bank tomorrow morning. Put on your alpaca jacket, and you go back to work as though nothing had happened.
Yes, sir. And should I mention the $87,000 I stole?
Not unless they mention it to you. Yes?
Who am I? I must be somebody.
Yes, you are somebody. If you could only give us a clue, brother.
I didn't drive up here in a fire engine, did I?
No.
I can't be Mayor LaGuardia.
No. No, he's taller than you are.
If you'll only help me, I'll pay you back. I'll give you half of anything I've got.
Well, what have you got? Nothing. Now get away from here. Get away.
You're the only friend I've got.
Now beat it, bum. Sit down behind that screen there.
All right, but who am I?
Please, friends. Please, if you recognize this faltering voice, if you are to help a poor, unfortunate soul, call this studio. This man not only has amnesia, he may have a problem. I may be able to help. Come in.
Excuse me for interrupting your program, Mr. Allen.
Well, who are you, friend?
I'm Kramer from the Board of Missing Heirs. We're next door, broadcasting from the studio.
Yes, Kramer.
One of our missing heirs got away.
One of your missing heirs is missing?
Yeah, we located this man we believe to be Ronald Spiewak this morning in a flop house. We told him his brother, Jock Spiewak, the fly swatter king, had left him $2 million. He fell back in his bunk and hit his head on a cement pillow.
Yes?
I picked him up and he didn't know me.
His mind was a blank?
Yeah, we brought him to our studio tonight to give him the $2 million. The program had just started. I looked around. Ronald Spiewak had disappeared.
You didn't give him the money?
The Board of Missing Heirs can't give him the $2 million until he identifies himself.
There was something in the will?
Yeah, the two Spiewak brothers had a code word.
I see.
The will demands that I say Philigadusha.
Philigadusha.
If this man says Shinamarusha.
Shinamarusha.
He is Ronald Spiewak, Jock Spiewak's brother. Have you seen this little man, Mr. Allen?
Was he wearing burlap pajamas, a seersucker bathrobe, and birch bark moccasins?
Yeah, yeah.
Your problem is solved, Kramer. Sitting behind this screen, you see?
Ronald Spiewak!
I'm glad to know you, Mr. Spiewak, but who am I?
Try your code words, Kramer.
Good idea, I will. Listen, Ronald.
Yes?
Philigadusha. Philigadusha.
You bet, but who am I?
His mind is another blank.
Let me try, Kramer.
Yeah, go ahead.
Listen, Ronald, listen closely. Rose O'Day, Rose O'Day, with Philigadusha.
Skinamarusha.
Skinamarusha, that's it!
Let's try him again, Kramer, to make sure. Philigadusha, Ronald.
Shinamarusha!
Philigadusha!
Shinamarusha! That's Jock's code word. Now I remember.
You remember what?
I'm Ronald Spiewak. My brother Jock left me $2 million. I'm rich.
Philigadusha!
Shinamarusha!
You're Ronald Spiewak, all right. Congratulations, Ronald.
Where's the money?
$2 million. Gad, this is a lucky day for all of us.
Say, wait a minute, buddy. Who are you?
Ronald, you haven't forgotten me, your friend and counselor, the man who brought you out of the darkness into the light.
I never saw you before in my life.
But, Ronnie...
Get away, bum. You bother me.
Raving, Ronald. I will stand by you. I shall be at your side from now on.
Who needs you? What I need is wine, woman, and song. Although I'm a little too old to sing. $2 million! Whoopee!
But, Ronald, you promised to give me half of anything you own. You owe me $1 million.
I owe you $1 million?
And don't forget your inheritance tax.
Inheritance tax?
50%. That's another $1 million.
You mean I get $2 million?
Yes, Ronald.
And I owe $2 million.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah?
Now, here, put down that microphone.
Gad, Rodney, he's knocked himself unconscious.
My $1 million. We've got to bring him to, Kramer. Slap him.
Yes, Ronald. Ronald.
Oh. Wake up, Ronnie.
Oh.
He's opening his eyes.
Ronnie, Philigadusha, Ronnie. Philigadusha.
Oh, am I? I must be shot.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I guess that closes our Star Theater for tonight. I want to thank you for joining us this evening. Next week, our guest will be Kay Kaiser, Man About Students, and the winner of the Texaco College competition at Buffalo University, Dean Staphicus. This is Fred Allen saying goodnight for the more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast, inviting you to tune in again next Sunday night and to drive in at your Texaco dealers at any time. Remember, you're welcome. Good night.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
Join us every Sunday from 4 to 7 p.m. for a special themed 3-hour block of music on WHFR Presents. Each week, one of our WHFR DJs will present a special curated playlist revolving around a particular theme. You never know what you're going to hear, so check it out every Sunday from 4 to 7 p.m. For more information on what's to come this and every Sunday on WHFR Presents, visit our website at www.whfr.fm. That's WHFR Presents, Sundays from 4 to 7 p.m. Earn your Associate in Applied Science degree with Henry Ford College's Computer Information Systems Network Administration Program. This program covers a wide range of topics within the computer networking and system administration fields and prepares students for a number of industry certification exams. HFC also has transfer agreements with several four-year universities toward your completion of a bachelor degree. For more information on this or any other area of study, visit hfcc.edu today.
The Johnson Wax Program. Presenting Marion and Jim Jordan as Fibber McGee and Molly. Ted Weems and his orchestra open the show with Gee, But You're Swell. We're ready to hear from...
Pardon me, Harlow. You dropped something. It's a snapshot.
Oh, thanks, Elmo. That's a picture taken in my sister's kitchen. Said she wanted me to see how fine the floor looked after she used Johnson's glow coat. Look, you can see even in this small picture how that linoleum shines. Notice that highlight?
Gee, that's a swell-looking floor.
Sure. She said in her letter that glow coat had made the floor look so much brighter and fresher that several people had asked her if she didn't have new linoleum. She's as proud as can be and says she's glad to prove for herself that I've been telling the truth all these many months when I've been saying that Johnson's glow coat certainly does save time and work. Why, right before your eyes, it changes dull old floors into lovely, bright surfaces. You don't have to do any rubbing or buffing when you use Johnson's self-polishing glow coat made by the makers of Johnson's Wax. And now we give you those two long shots of the human race, Fibber McGee and Molly.
Got a toothpick, Molly?
No, why?
I got a seed in my teeth from that opening raspberry.
Don't be so sensitive, McGee. You're too thin-skinned.
What's the matter with being thin-skinned? After all, an apple keeps longer than a watermelon.
Sure, but it's the thick-skinned animals that live longest. Now you take the rhinoceros or the elephant.
How about a harpopotamus? Wonder if he heard me.
No, I didn't.
Oh, shucks. Just my luck.
Listen, McGee, speaking of hippopotamuses, are you going back to that trainer again for some more physical culture?
Well, I don't know, Molly. After all, I got no ambition to go around with my muscles bulging like a dozen pigeons up my sleeve.
Oh, it isn't that, McGee, but you should take more exercise to build up your resistance.
Why, that's silly. I can't think of anything I want to resist.
Just the same, I think you should. You know, you're awful broad-shouldered in the hip.
Kind of wide across the pistol pocket, huh? But I think I can accomplish the same thing with diet.
You know, I tried that, too.
Yeah?
Once I went on a diet of whole wheat toast and tea and salad.
Well, how'd it work?
Not bad. Only I didn't have much appetite for my regular meals.
Well, I think people are inclined to get too serious about their health. They ought to laugh and play more.
That's a lovely idea, but it'll never get you anywhere.
Oh, no?
No.
Well, where would Jimmy Durante have been today if he'd have kept his nose to the grindstone?
Ah, you've got a fine philosophy of life. You'll never be a success.
Oh, I'm doing all right. I hit the jackpot twice last week over Joe's cigar store. You can't do that unless you live right.
Nevertheless, McGee, you ought to have a figure more like Ted Weems. Take a look at him. Slim and handsome.
Oh, Ted's too slim, Molly. You know what happened to him yesterday?
What?
Well, the boys got through playing, and Ted was standing there all dressed up in that new black overcoat of his, and Parker Gibbs carried him clear home, thinking he was a clarinet.
You know, I'm going to ask Ted how he keeps in condition. Oh, Ted.
Well, what's the matter, Molly?
Oh, nothing, Ted.
Listen, Ted. How on earth do you keep so slim and all?
Setting up exercises.
Oh.
Yeah, he sets up all night worrying about his figure.
What kind of setting up exercises, Ted?
Well, you see this baton?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
This baton only weighs an ounce.
Oh.
For a heavy workout, I use a 3-ounce baton.
Oh.
Keeps me in fine shape.
Yeah. You sounded a little muscle-bound on that last number. You didn't write the athlete's anthem, did you, Ted?
Athlete's anthem?
Yeah, Swing Mr. Charlie Horse.
No, but I did the lyrics for the biceps ballet.
Biceps
what was
ballet?
That?
You know, da, 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 muscle tough. But why don't you talk to Perry Como? All the girls are crazy about him. I'll send him over.
Now you see, McGee, Ted's a success because he keeps in shape.
Yeah, well, Paul Whiteman ain't on relief either.
Perry.
Hi, Perry.
Ted said you wanted to speak to me.
Yes, you know, I've been trying to tell McGee he ought to keep up with his physical training. Oh, he isn't fat or anything, but just soft. Well, I can't even get him to do a thing around the house, Perry.
Go on, I shined up the kitchen floor this morning, didn't I?
Yes, but we used Johnson's glow coat, so you knew it was the easiest job in the house. How am I doing, Mr. Wilcox?
You took the words right out of my script.
But seriously, Perry, how do you keep fit?
I've got a dog.
A dog?
Oh, well, that's a big help. You got a dog. Well, what does that prove?
Well, I've got to take the dog for a walk, haven't I?
Yeah.
I've had to walk with him, don't I?
Oh, you see, McGee, if you're pouchy, get a poochy.
I don't think you got anything there, Molly.
Well, thanks a lot, Perry. That's a grand idea. It gives you plenty of exercise, does it?
Does it? I've worn out 3 greyhounds already.
Oh.
If there's anything else I can tell you, Sam.
Shucks, a dog. Imagine Joe Louis training for a fight by parading a poodle around the park.
Say, listen, McGee. Hmm? What do you say we go downtown and get a dog?
Oh, now, Molly,
McGee, you've always said you wanted a dog.
Yes, but I don't feel...
Oh, think of it. Just think of it. Who is it that waits patiently on the doorstep for the master to come home?
Oh,
with
well...
a warm welcome in his big brown eyes. Who jumps up on you and depends on you to give him his supper?
Your Uncle Dennis. There's an Irish terrier.
Sometimes I wonder what's in store for me. Your love could open heaven's door to me. But you don't care a straw about me. That's life, I guess. My days and nights all start and halt with you. My sugared kisses taste like salt to you. But why should I find fault with you? That's life, I guess. The world was bright when you loved me. Sweet was the touch of your lips. The world went dark when you left me. And then there came a total eclipse. Nobody knows how cruel fate can be. How close together love and hate can be. Goodbye just seemed a slave for me. That is life, I guess.
Looking in the window of the Wistful Vista Pet Shop on the corner of 14th and Oak Street, we find those two prospective puppy purchasers, Fibber and Molly.
Oh, ain't them cute puppies in that window, Molly?
Bring a good old beagle, boy.
Sure are. Say, what kind of a dog do you think we ought to get, McGee?
Well, I don't know, Molly. You remember that little white pup in The Thin Man? I'd like one like that.
Why?
Well, I might find Myrna Loy on the other end of the leash.
Be silly, McGee. I think I'd like a peek.
At what?
A peek in the evening. Think how nice one would look with me brown fur coat.
What? All right, but don't let him wear that red hat. Oh, them puppies are having a lot of fun, ain't they?
Yeah.
How about that one? What would you say he was? A wire hair with a short circuit?
Well, I think his mother must have been a Mexican careless.
Looks like a police dog had been crossed with a coach dog and they'd got a patrol wagon with a tail.
You mean a patrol with a tail wagon?
Yeah.
Well, come on, let's go in.
Okay.
Huh? Hello, Savani. Hello, Babushka.
Oh, hi. Hi, Vodka. Are you the proprietor here?
Sure, Savani. I'm being expert on all animal kinds, from little elephants up to big trained fleas.
Hmm. From elephants to fleas, eh? Looks kind of like Frank Buck, don't he, Molly?
Oh, he's too big.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say about a buck and a quarter. Well, we're looking for a dog.
Yeah.
Good, Babushka. When you are looking at me, you are looking at a beautiful dog which I have plenty of them in windows and back rooms.
You see, Bud...
Me husband here needs exercise, so he thought if he got himself a...
Don't mention it, Babushka. I am catching on quick. Are you living in houses or apartments?
Well, a house, but I...
I'm selling you just what you need, Tavares. English sheep dog.
We haven't any sheep.
Well, maybe he wants to sell us some sheep, too. Stop us if you've herded them, Bud. Get up, Molly.
Ain't funny, McGee.
Okay. Okay, I'm not fussy. The fact is, Bud, we don't care what his nationality is if he can walk.
You will be liking these dogs. It is Bedlington. You will no doubtless wanting two of him.
Oh, I see. Twin Bedlington.
You see, Bud, being an old pet shop owner myself, I understand the difference.
Excuse me, please. I must answer a telephone.
Oh, don't mention it, I'm sure.
Mm.
Now, what were you going to tell him, Mr. Ex-Pet Shop Prop?
Well, I was just going to tell him about the time I had me a pet shop. I was done. Oh, you back already, Bud?
Duh.
I was just telling my wife here about when I used to have me my pet shop. Back in Peoria. Pet Shop McGee, I was known as in them days.
Oh, dear.
Pet Shop McGee, the perspicacious purchaser of pet pigs, playful ponies, peppy pups, and popular promoter of parrot production in Peoria.
That's so. I'm very glad, Tavares.
You interrupted me, Bud.
Sure.
I was going to tell you about the time I had me some smart dogs displayed in the window of my shop. There was a Scotty, a wire hair, two Doberman pinchers, and a Dachshund. Well, sir, one day I had me a little auto accident and was detained at the police station. I kept worrying about my dogs, about who was going to feed them and all. But shucks, I had all my worry for nothing.
Well, how's that, McGee?
Well, sir, when I got back, I found that them dogs picked the lock so the Dachshund could scoot through and get the biscuits.
Picked the lock?
Mm-hmm.
Those dogs?
Yeah, it was the Scotty's idea, you see. Two of the dogs twisted the wire hair till he fit the lock.
Well, how did they do that?
With a pair of Doberman pinchers.
Excuse me, Tavarich, but I'm seeing you are a fat shop man, and I'm asking favors for a minute. What's store for me while I'm going for a few minutes to see my cousin, Ivan Kuprachkin Yalko Purazatsky?
What's his first name?
Gus.
Listen here, we can't...
No, I don't know, but
for doing this, Tavarich, I'm giving you special discount on dog buying. Dobra.
Dobra to you, too. Can you imagine
it? McGee, every time you open your mouth, you put your foot in it up to your hip.
Well, how did I know him? Oh, here comes Ted Weems carrying a parrot. Hi, Ted. What can we do for you?
Do you fix parrots?
Well, what's the matter with him? Looks like a pretty good parrot to me, except for that bandage around his beak and his neck's all twisted to one side.
What happened to him, Ted?
I had a party at my house, and Parker Gibbs tried to open a bottle of ginger ale with him.
Well, take him home, and we'll send you a bill.
Okay.
Can you imagine that, McGee? Trying to use a poor parrot's beak to open a ginger ale bottle.
Well, what's funny about that? Shucks, they used the mayor to open the new public library.
That's funny, McGee. Cute girl, too.
I'll wait on her. Hi, sis. What can we do for you? Need some accessories? We got everything from hippo harness to guppy galoshes.
No, never mind. I'll wait, please.
Wait for what, sis?
Oh, I'll just wait, that's all.
Oh, well, you must want something.
Oh, maybe she wants to look around a little while. Anything I can show you, sis? Something in a four-legged friend?
Yes, give me a chair.
Okay. Here you are. Sit down, miss.
Thank you.
Now, when you want something, just speak up, dearie.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll get it, McGee.
Okay.
Hello, Wistful Vista Pet Shop, Molly McGee speaking. Yes? Yes, I see. Just a minute, please.
What's the matter, Molly?
Lady wants to know what to feed her guppies.
Well, tell her just feed them lightly in the morning with a little milk and cornbread. Let them have an old shoe to chew on during the day. Then in the evening, some mush or slightly cooked hamburger. And take them out for a walk 4 times a day.
Guppies?
What?
Guppies?
Oh, I thought you says puppies. Tell her to swim over here with them someday and we'll work out a diet.
Hello? I think you've got the wrong number, madam.
Yeah.
Now, McGee, maybe the girl over there has made up her mind what she wants.
Well, I'll see. How about it, sis? You know what you want now?
Yes, I do.
Fine. What'll it be?
I'll just wait.
Oh. She'll wait, Molly.
Wait for what?
Well, search me, I suppose. Oh, look. Silly Watson.
Hi, Miss McGee. Y'all working here now?
Oh, just temporarily, silly. Why?
Well, when you get through, could y'all come down to the jailhouse and see, could you explain my brother to the jail man?
Your brother considerable?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's he in for, silly?
30 days, please, ma'am.
No. She means, what did he do?
It ain't what did he do, Miss McGee. It's what he gonna do.
And what's that?
30 days.
Yes, Phil. What was he arrested for?
Well, sir, considerable, he's a musician.
Yeah.
Only musician stuff is kind of scarce around here right now. So he get himself a job with a farmer.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, ma'am. The old farmer, he had to bring my brother a new hoe every day, mostly.
A new hoe?
Yes, sir. My brother, he hid him under the barn.
He what?
He hid him. The old farmer, he found out where my brother had hit him, and he had him pinned. He said, boy, what for you do this? And considerably, he tell him.
What did he tell him?
Well, he said he was holding old potatoes facing the hay field, and every time he seen the folks making hay, hay, he got to hide the hole. Goodbye,
Thank you.
the McGees are still in charge of the Wistful Vista Pet Shop, and they still don't know what their lady customer wants.
McGee.
Hmm?
Maybe she's made up her mind now. Ask her again.
Okay. How about it, sis? You know what you want yet?
Yes, I do.
Well, that's the stuff. What'll it be?
I'll wait.
Had read it. You'll wait for what?
Oh, never mind. I'll just wait.
Well, I know, but look here, you...
McGee.
Huh?
The customer's always right. Oh, how do you do, sir? What can we do for you?
I want a cat.
Oh, a cat, huh? Well, we only got one, Bud, that little brown one over there.
What is it, a tan Persian?
No, a chocolate Maltese.
No, thanks. No, thanks. Too rich.
That's nice going, McGee. Anything else you can do to ruin the business here?
What do you mean, ruin it? Say, I know more about the pet shop racket than anybody else. Why, mind the time down. Oh, Mrs. Wearybottom. Hi, Weary.
Oh, hello, folks. What are you doing working in here among all these goldfish and canaries and cats and stuff and dogs? I'll never forget my uncle when he made his will. He insisted on being put in a mausoleum built in the shape of a kennel. He said he'd been in the doghouse all his life. He didn't know why he should change now. What a horrible necktie you got on.
Oh, you don't like it, eh? Well, listen, Weary, how about buying some of these Japanese fantails? Oriental Sally Rand goldfish, we call them.
I've got a lot of goldfish in the house now. My neighbors say they keep them awake all night, splashing around. Why, when I got those goldfish, they didn't even look like goldfish, and my brother used to sing a song like, "When your hair is turned to silver," only he called it, "When your herring is turned to goldfish, I will carp no more today." He was an awful fool, my brother was. It's real slippery out, ain't it?
When your herring is turned to shuck. What a song.
Some fish food.
Yeah, you want to eat it here or take it home?
I know when I'm not wanted. Goodbye.
Molly, see if that girl over there's made up her mind what she wants.
Okay. Now then, dearie, are you ready to buy something?
No, thank you.
Well, you going to sit there all day, sis?
Yes, if necessary.
If necessary to what? Can't you tell us what you want?
Yes.
Okay, what?
I want to wait.
Oh. Okay, but you'll have to leave when we close up.
Get the phone, McGee.
All right. Hello. Yes? What? A leash for a dog? No, we don't leash our dogs, sis. We sell them outright. Oh, is that so? Trying to get funny with me. Well, what can we do for you, Bud?
How do you do, my little mongrel merchants?
Well, how do you do, I'm sure.
Allow me to introduce myself. Well. I'm Horatio K. Boomer of the Boomer Dog and Pony Shows. I'm looking for a small dog that can do tricks.
Oh.
Just lost my most valuable canine. Splendid animal, splendid. Could find anything anywhere, yes, yes.
What kind of tricks did he do?
Quite a retriever.
Retriever?
Used to retrieve pocketbooks from all over the circus ground.
Well.
If I can't get another one, I'll have to go into retriever champ. Yes, yes. Yes, he's a very fine dog. Wouldn't touch a wallet with less than $5 in it. Very intelligent animal. Worked for me for years. Never tore a customer's hip pocket.
That's a fine thing to teach a dog to do, Boomer. Make a pickpocket out of him.
Why, sure. We wouldn't sell you a dog for that purpose.
Your honest sentiments do you credit, my dear. Yes, yes.
What became of the dog, Boomer?
Well, I'll tell you. Pardon me if I wipe my eyes. It's a very touching story. We were playing Oskaloosa last week, and there was a flea circus next door. My dog eloped with their leading lady. Just a stage door, Fido. And if I don't find him, I'm going to be out of luck. Yes, yes. Well, if you won't sell me a dog, I'll have to look elsewhere. Good day to you and the best of...
Hey there. Put those goldfish down.
Oh, yes. Excuse me. Every time I see a couple of fins floating around, I always... good day to you. Good day and the best of health.
Thanks, bud.
To your livestock. Yeah.
What?
I think he was crooked.
No.
Really, I do. You heard what he said about that.
Oh, hello there, little girl.
Hi, mister.
Well, what can I do for you?
Hmm?
I says, what did you want?
I want to look at the birds and the goldfish and the canaries and things. Can I, mister? Can I, please?
Oh, okay, sis, but don't touch anything. You might get bit by a parrot or something.
Hmm?
I bet you'd cry if a parrot bit you.
You would, too, I bet you, if he bit you.
Well, I bet you... I mean... How do you like the goldfish?
Swell. Who painted them?
Nobody painted them. They come that way.
What way?
Gold.
Hmm?
I says goldfish are naturally gold.
Why?
Well, Dad Bennett, how do I know why?
Well, don't you work here?
Well, of course I work here, but that's...
Well, gee, then you ought to know why, I bet you.
Oh. Well, why is a parrot all them bright colors?
Why?
I'm asking you.
I guess we're both pretty dumb, aren't we?
Can you imagine that kid coming in here and...
Oh, how do you do, sir? What can we do for you now? We have some lovely...
I'm looking for a girl who said she'd... Oh, there she is. Margie.
Albert.
Darling.
Sweetheart.
Heavenly days, Mickey. Look at him.
Hey, you two lovebirds. Go on home if you want to do that, or find a park bench.
Oh, Albert.
Hey, quit it, I said.
Who's the snooky who comes as old?
Oh, Albert.
Hey, what's the idea here? What do you think this is?
Well, the sign in the window says pet shop.
Well, you know, I think I could make dough in a pet shop like that. You know, I got a kind of a way with animals.
Oh,
things.
Yes? But you haven't much of a way with customers.
What do you mean, Molly?
Well, when that fella came in with the St. Bernard dog and said it was eating him out of a house and home and wanted to trade it in for something smaller, what did you tell him?
Well, I just told
him. Why, you told him to trade it in for a moth because moths only eat holes.
Good night.
Good night, all.
All right, you are listening to Radio Vault, boys and girls, moms and dads, aunts and uncles, dogs and cats, whoever else is listening. We just heard Fibber McGee and Molly from way back in 1937, February of that year to be exact. We're not quite done yet. All right, without further ado, we're going to jump right into our next feature. This is our Miss Brooks, who was an English teacher at a high school. She was really good friends with all her students, or pupils, as they called them in those days. Gail Gordon is featured as Mr. Conklin. If you are of a certain age, you might remember Gail Gordon as Mr. Mooney on The Lucy Show. Well, let's go back now to January 30, 1949, to our Miss Brooks.
Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. Our Miss Brooks teaches English at Madison High School, and what with the overcrowded classrooms and a rather rigorous schedule, has had a pretty busy time during the past semester.
But not busy enough, evidently, to suit Mr. Osgood Conklin, Madison's beloved warden, a principal. Just recently, Mr. Conklin organized a school banking system, and who do you think was selected for the honor of handling this noble project at no increase in salary? Well, it wasn't Barney Baruch. I've had to take care of all the records single-handed. Oh, I'm not complaining. I think it's admirable for people to be saving and frugal, especially if you've got something to frug, a save. But I didn't count on the complications that set in last week. It seems that after school Thursday, I had $25 of the student's money in an envelope, which I placed on the dresser in my room at Mrs. Davis's. I intended to deposit it Friday morning and had asked Mrs. Davis to wake me at the usual time. I was sleeping very heavily when she knocked on my door.
Connie! Oh, Connie! Connie, are you in there?
No, I'll be back in 15 minutes.
Come on now, Connie. You've got to get up.
Why?
To go to school.
I graduated from school a long time ago. Well, not such a long time ago.
Before you do anything else, dear, I want you to see the surprise I've got for you here in this box.
In this box?
Go on, open it, Connie.
Oh, I don't understand, Mrs. Davis. It isn't my birthday or anything. Why, it's a dress. Oh, you shouldn't have done it, Mrs. Davis.
Oh, sure I should have.
No, you shouldn't.
Yes, I should. I bought it with practically found money.
Found money?
Yes, I found it on your dresser yesterday. I knew that you'd left it for me to cover the back rent you owe. But frankly, Connie, I didn't expect it so soon and so...
Mrs. Davis.
Yes, Connie.
You shouldn't have done it.
But why not? Don't you like the dress, Connie?
Sure I like the dress. I love the dress. But will the district attorney care for it?
What district attorney?
Well, don't you see, Mrs. Davis, that wasn't my money. I was going to deposit that for the students. And today also happens to be the day Mr. Conklin inspects my bank records.
That is a coincidence, isn't it?
Yeah, the happiest coincidence since Frankenstein met the Wolfman. Look, I know you meant well, and I hate to hurt your feelings, but really...
Oh, you won't hurt my feelings, Connie. I'm a lot like my sister Angela that way. She just refuses to harbor bad thoughts.
That's very nice, Mrs. Davis. But from what you've told me about Angela, sometimes she doesn't harbor any thoughts at all.
Yes, she is terribly absent-minded, poor dear. But sometimes that's for the best.
What's for the best?
What's for the best for who?
If you'll punch my transfer, I'd like to get off. You see, Mrs. Davis, I've got a big problem today. That money that paid for that dress didn't belong to me.
It didn't?
I've already told you, Mrs. Davis, it was part of the student's savings.
Oh, Connie, then you shouldn't have done it.
I didn't do it, you did it.
Ignorance of the law is no excuse.
Oh, this is terrible. Let's see that box again. Oh, you got the dress at Sherry's department store. Maybe they'll take it back and refund the money.
You see, Connie, I thought you left the money for the back rent you owe. And
I know you did, Mrs. Davis, and I appreciate the thought more than I can tell you. But if you'll excuse me, I've got to get ready now. Walter Denton's picking me up in a few minutes.
Oh, did you have another accident with your car, Connie?
Just a slight collision with a new Hudson, Mrs. Davis.
What happened?
Well, you know the ad they have? Hudson, the car you stepped down into?
Yes.
Well, this one I drove down into. To get to Sherry's department store, Walter. I've got to stop there for a minute.
Oh, sure, Miss Brooks. I'll get you there in no time. By the way, how do you like the car today?
The car? Oh, it looks fine, Walter.
I polished all four fenders the other day.
Well, I'm sure that'll improve the appearance of... What fenders? You haven't got any fenders on the car at all.
Oh, of course not. They're home in my garage. I only put them on weekends.
Weekends?
Well, sure. Even people don't dress up every day in the week.
I see. No sense in hitting a sloppy pedestrian with a natty car.
Exactly. You know, human beings are a lot like cars if they only stop to think about it. Take yourself, for instance. The way you look this morning.
I know. Stanley Steamer.
Yeah, I'm only trying to be helpful, Miss Brooks. You look a little worried about something. Is there anything I can do?
Nothing I can think of offhand, Walter. Just keep it under your hat.
You keep what under my hat?
The information you're going to worm out of me by the time we get to Sherry's.
Oh. Well, what is the information?
It's about the school banking system.
Oh, how that. I know that's a big pain in the neck to you, but that's nothing to get depressed about. Gosh, did you see the papers this morning?
No, I didn't get a chance.
Well, you ought to read the story in the bulletin. Oh, that'd cheer you up. It's all about a woman embezzler who was caught stealing $19,000 from the Federal Trust Company. They just gave her 10 years in the clink.
I feel better already.
Oh, she didn't even get a chance to spend any of the dough she embezzled. I guess honesty's the best policy after all.
Wish I'd taken out a policy like that.
And right in the same paper is another story that'd make you glad just to be working at school, Miss Brooks. It's about conditions in the state reformatory for women.
No good, huh?
Deplorable. Oh, they make the poor inmates mop the floors all day long. And if they haven't got any mops, which they usually don't have because they're so short of everything, why, then the women have to mop the floors with their hands.
How awful. Oh, here's the store, Walter. Drive up in the back, will you? That's the quickest way to get to the basement.
Basement?
Certainly. That's where they keep the mops, isn't it? Let's see now. Adjustment office. This must be it. I beg your pardon.
Yeah, come in. You're my very first adjustment today. Sit down, won't you, Miss...
Brooks. Constance Brooks.
How do you do, Miss Brooks? I'm Mr. Pearson. Would you like a cigarette?
No, thanks. I'm in kind
a
of a...
A cup of coffee?
No, I've got to get to school pretty quickly.
Good for you. There's nothing I like better than a nice, punctual pupil.
This interview may not be as unpleasant as I anticipated. I'm not a pupil, Mr. Pearson. I'm a teacher at Madison High. But the reason I dropped in here is to return a dress someone bought for me.
Well, you know the motto of Sherry's, don't you? If you're not satisfied, we cheerfully refund your money.
That's what I've heard.
And that's what we do. Now then, about this dress. You don't like it?
Yes, I do. I like it very much.
But it doesn't fit quite properly.
Well, I can't be certain about that because, frankly, I didn't even...
The color. Oh, you don't like the color.
I think the color is peachy.
I see. And so it clashes with your complexion.
You don't understand. I just can't keep the dress. I've got to get the money back.
Well, that's what we're here for. In Sherry's, your money is cheerfully refunded.
She'd stop being cheerful and start refunding.
And now then, first of all, we must have a valid basis for adjustment. Tell me, how did you find out that the material in this garment is inferior?
Inferior? I didn't find
out.
The
sales lady told you, didn't she? Miss Morgan.
Miss Morgan?
So, you know her. Well, there's no sense trying to shield her, Miss Brooks. I knew there was a leak somewhere. We'll have a loyalty check in the morning.
Look, somebody bought me this dress with money that... Well, it shouldn't have been spent.
Why not, Miss Brooks? Don't answer that. I know. It was counterfeit money. Young woman, I'm surprised at you. Surprised and shocked.
Now, just a minute, Mr. Pearson. There was nothing wrong with the money Mrs. Davis paid for this dress.
So, Mrs. Davis paid for the dress. Miss Brooks, what are you doing with Mrs. Davis's dress under your arm?
I know.
You couldn't afford the dress yourself, but you needed money. So when you saw it lying there on Mrs. Davis's bed, you couldn't resist the temptation. You picked it up and brought it here for a refund. Oh, you poor misguided creature.
This guy really runs the gamut. Listen, Mr. Pearson, Mrs. Davis is my landlady. She bought me a dress for a present in this store yesterday.
Well, why didn't you say so, Miss Brooks? You see, yesterday we had our final clearance sale of ladies' dresses. And, of course, in a closeout of that sort, there can never be any refund.
What?
But remember, anything else you buy can be returned within 60 days, and Sherry's will cheerfully refund your money.
That's just dandy. And the next time you have a sale, be sure and get in touch with me.
Yeah, I'll be glad to. Where can we reach you?
Just drop into any post office. You'll find my number under my picture.
Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, will continue in just a moment.
Well, Sherry's department store lived up to its reputation by refunding the dress and cheerfully keeping my money. In a way, it's a good thing I had the extra dress with me, because when we got to school, I stepped out of Walter's car and right through the hem of the dress I had on. Well, knowing I had to face Mr. Conklin, I felt pretty panicky. It's bad enough to have your spirits dragging without having your hem down there, too. But I finally hit on a pretty good scheme. Between classes, I dropped into the domestic science room to have my old dress patched up and to try and sell the new one. Excuse me, Miss Atterbury, but I wonder if you could help me out.
Oh, it's Miss Brooks. Well, come in, dear. What can I do for you?
Well, I tore the hem of this dress I've got on. I'd like to get it fixed up.
Well, I'll do whatever I can. Some of these sewing machines are in pretty bad shape. There's one old singer here that hasn't worked for weeks.
That's too bad. Maybe you could teach him to dance. Or sew the seam by hand.
Let's see that hem now. Pretty bad rip. Take quite a while to fix it.
Well, then maybe I'd better slip on this other dress till you're done. I'll just step behind this screen here and take this one off. Oh, there. You got it?
Yes, I'll start stitching it up right away.
Good. I'll certainly appreciate it, Miss Atterbury. Well, I've got this one on. How do you like it?
Why, it's lovely, Miss Brooks. I wish I had one like it.
You have, Miss Atterbury. I've decided this dress is not my type, so you're welcome to it for $25.
Only $25? That's a steal, Miss Brooks.
Let's use another word, shall we? Now, if you'll excuse me, Miss Atterbury, I've got to get over to Mr. Conklin's office.
All right, Miss Brooks, and I'll have your other dress all fixed when you come back. Then we'll try the new one on me. Of course, I weigh 186, but I hope I can get into it.
Just have the $25 ready. You'll get into it. Oh, one thing, Miss Atterbury.
Yes?
While I'm gone, try and lose a few pounds.
Now, see here, Harriet, just because you're my daughter doesn't give you the privilege of taking time off from your study period. As principal of this school, I
must... But, Daddy, it'll only take a minute. I just want your permission to withdraw $3 from my school savings account. I've just got to have a new sweater.
Harriet, it distresses me to hear you talk this way. Why, do you realize that it's invariably a craving for unnecessary finery that is the basis for most of the crimes committed by women?
But, Daddy...
Just this morning, there was a story in the paper about a woman being held as an embezzler. And do you know what her alibi was? She needed clothes. I tell you, it's a disgrace what this civilization is coming to. Show me a well-dressed girl who has only a moderate income, and I'll show you an embezzler.
Good morning, Mr. Conklin.
Oh, good morning, Miss Brooks. I see we have on a new dress.
Oh, is yours new, too? This is sort of new. Yes. Hello, Harriet.
Hi, Miss Brooks.
Run along, Harriet. I have some important matters to discuss with Miss Brooks.
All right, Daddy. We'll take my matter up later on, huh?
Dismissed, girl.
Yes, sir.
Now then, Miss Brooks, have you brought all the student banking records with you?
Well, not exactly all of them, Mr. Conklin.
Then how many?
None of them. You see, I wanted to double-check some of the items before you and I did the final recap, and...
are you trying to tell me, Miss Brooks?
Oh, I'm not trying to tell you anything, Mr. Conklin. The less, the better. You see, there's one more deposit I've got to make today before the records tally.
Very well, Miss Brooks. I'll wait until lunch period.
Well, have a long lunch period, Mr. Conklin. It may take me quite a while.
To do what, Miss Brooks?
To start a pyramid club. See you later, Mr. Oh, you did a wonderful job on my old dress, Miss Atterbury. Now, suppose you try on this new one.
All right, Miss Brooks. But I'm so much heavier than you, I hope I can get it on.
Oh, you'll get it on easily. I have to smear you with butter. Now, off with the old... And on with the new. Lift your arms. That's a good girl. Now, down over your shoulders. Fine. Past your waist. Good. Now, past your... There. Oh, it fits you like a glove, Miss Atterbury.
Feels like I'm standing in the pinky.
Well, close the zipper along the side.
The zipper? All right. Oh, it won't move.
Oh, nonsense. Take a deep breath. Now hold it. Oh, there we are.
When can I breathe out?
Oh, don't be a child. You look lovely in it, Miss Atterbury.
Thanks, Miss Brooks. But I can't hold my breath any longer. What happened?
Nothing much. The zipper just returned to at ease. You know, that's what I like about this dress, Miss Atterbury. It brings out the real you. God love you. We will have to alter it a little, but if you'll just give me that $25 now, I'd like to
just
go and
make... Just a minute, Miss Brooks. I don't know if I want to buy this dress right now. Here, let me take another deep breath.
The latest thing, plunging neckline. You know, the fashion experts say that necklines are going further south every year.
I
know. Of course, this one's on its way to Mexico City, but I'm sure the dress can be made to fit
and
you.
And I'm sure it can't, Miss Brooks. We just weren't made for each other. Help me get it off, will you?
All right, Miss Atterbury, but you're overlooking a great buy. After all, breathing isn't everything.
There you are, Miss Brooks.
I've got an idea. Why don't you dye the dress?
Dye it? What color?
Flesh color. Then you wouldn't have to worry about the zipper. No, I guess not. Oh, there's the lunch period. I've got to hurry over to Mr. Boynton's laboratory.
Oh, did Mr. Boynton invite you to lunch, Miss Brooks?
That's why I've got to hurry. He's just going to. Oh, hello, Mr. Boynton. I'm glad I caught you before you went to lunch.
Hello, Miss Brooks. I'm not going to the cafeteria today. I brought a couple of sandwiches to eat right here. Would you like one of them?
Oh, I don't know, Mr. Boynton. I don't like to take
Go ahead, Miss Brooks. They're very good.
Well, thanks.
And they're only 30 cents apiece.
Here's 15. I'll just eat the bottom half. You know, I really should be in Mr. Conklin's office right now with the school banking records, but frankly, I'm a little shy.
Well, that's one of the reasons I like you, Miss Brooks.
I don't mean bashful shy. I mean come to the station house shy.
I don't understand, Miss Brooks. Is there something wrong?
Nothing serious, Mr. Boynton. Do you think you could ever love an embezzler?
I never have. What's this all about, Miss Brooks?
Oh, well, let's forget it. Let's live for today. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Here's another 15 cents. Give me the top of that sandwich.
Are you sure everything's all right, Miss Brooks?
Oh, let's not talk about it, Mr. Boynton. Tell me, why are you eating in the lab? Cutting down on expenses?
Well, sort of. I've been a little short all month.
You too?
Well, I'll be solvent again this afternoon. Mr. Conklin's buying a sport jacket of mine. It's one that was sent to me for Christmas, and he just insists on my selling it to him. He says he wants to wear it to the faculty masquerade ball next month.
Masquerade ball? What kind of a jacket is it?
Well, it's green suede. Mr. Conklin's going as Robin Hood.
Oh, he's a natural. What's he giving you for it?
About $25.
Gee, I'm glad I dropped in today. It's good to see you, Mr. Boynton.
Thanks, Miss Brooks.
What are you going to wear to the masquerade, Mr. Boynton?
Well, I don't know. I haven't made up my mind yet.
You only think you haven't made up your mind yet. Mr. Boynton, I happen to have in this box the ideal costume for you.
Oh, but Miss Brooks, I...
Let me unwrap it for you.
Hmm?
Now, tell the truth, Mr. Boynton. Who always wins the grand prize at fancy dress affairs? Men who dress as women.
Men who dress as women.
You're so right, Mr. Boynton. Now take your jacket off.
But I don't want...
Now that's a good boy. Just slip this dress on for size.
Oh, but Miss Brooks, I'll never be able to get into it.
If Miss Atterbury could get into it, you can get into it. Now come on, right over your head. Just straighten it out. There.
Oh, I feel ridiculous, Miss Brooks.
Why, it looks lovely on you, Mr. Boynton. And I'm going to let you have it very reasonably.
But it's so tight.
Well, naturally it's tight now, but that's easily corrected. It'll fit you perfectly when you've got the proper foundation garment on.
Foundation garment?
Oh, excuse me, Walter and I were just... Oh, hi, Miss Brooks.
Hello, Harriet, Walter.
We were... Who's your friend? What a bill!
Walter, please. It's Mr. Boynton.
Mr. Boynton?
I'm just trying on a masquerade costume.
Oh, I see. Well, the reason we were looking for you, Miss Brooks, was to tell you that Daddy wants to go over those school savings records right away.
I know he does, Harriet, but I haven't been able to make a certain deposit yet. However, as soon as I sell this dress to Mr. Boynton...
Oh, I'm afraid I can't buy this, Miss Brooks. It's just not my type of costume.
Oh, but Mr. Boynton...
Wait a minute, Miss Brooks. If Mr. Boynton doesn't want the dress, maybe my mother will buy it. I know she's been saving up for one.
Really, Harriet? Do you think she'd like it?
Why, I think so. Would you mind modeling it for me, Mr. Boynton?
Modeling it?
You know, walk up and down with your hand on your hip.
I had to do that once when I first joined a fraternity.
No, but this is absurd.
Please, Mr. Boynton, just a few steps.
Well...
A pretty girl...
There you are, Miss Brooks.
Oh, hello, Mr. Conklin.
Hi, Daddy. Mr. Conklin.
Hello, Mr. Conklin.
Hello, Miss Boynton. Now then, Miss Brooks, I have been expecting... Mr. Boynton!
I was just trying it on for size, Mr. Conklin, but...
I know this is a biology laboratory, but what kind of an experiment is this?
Oh, it's just for the the masquerade, Mr. Conklin.
I don't want to hear any more about it. I presume you still haven't prepared the school savings record yet?
No, I haven't, Mr.
Well,
Conklin.
I'll be tied up for the rest of the day, but bring them to my home immediately after school.
And they'd better balance.
Let's see now, where were we? Oh, yes. She will leave you and then come back again.
Now, if you'll just take this chair by the desk, Miss Brooks, we'll check these columns of figures.
Oh, before you do, Mr. Conklin, there's something I'd like to explain. You see, when you add them all
I'm
up, they
sure
don't...
I'm mentally equipped to add a column of figures, Miss Brooks. 6, 6, 8, 14, 9, 23, 7, 8, 9, 10. Please, Martha. Can't you see I'm trying to do some work here?
Well, I just want to talk to Miss Brooks for a minute.
Well, go ahead, but be quiet about it.
Yes, dear. Come over here, Miss Brooks.
I see you're wearing the dress, Mrs. Conklin. How do you like it?
Oh, I like it fine. How much did you say it was worth?
$25.
Oh, good. You'll never guess where I keep my money, Miss Brooks.
Not in the school savings bank, I hope.
No, it's in the sugar bowl. I'll go and get it for you, Miss Brooks.
Miss Brooks, come here this instant.
Yes, sir. Hurry, Mrs. Conklin.
Now sit down, Miss Brooks. I've added these figures very carefully, 3 times, and I still get the same total.
I know, there's $25 missing.
You knew?
That's what I was trying to explain, Mr. Conklin. You see, that was the money I didn't deposit.
But why not?
Well, it was used for something else.
Something else? But that was a sacred trust, Miss Brooks. How could you do such a thing? Why, that's an awful...
Pardon me, Osgood. But I've got to talk to you. There's $25 missing from the sugar bowl.
From the sugar bowl?
Only you and I knew that money was there, Osgood.
Well, you see, dear, my check isn't due for 2 weeks, and
I want that money, Osgood. I want it now.
But
she wants the dough, Osgood, and she wants it now. See?
What? Oh,
well, I mean, not just anyone can play in the sugar bowl. You've got to be invited by the Southern Conference. Of course, this year the Rose Bowl.
I'll get it.
Hello, Mrs. Conklin. Oh, good afternoon, Miss Brooks.
Hello, Mr. Boynton.
Well, here's that jacket, Mr. Conklin. I must say it's a good buy for only $25.
Jacket?
I meant to call you about that, Boynton. I've decided against buying anything for myself. I want to surprise Mrs. Conklin with a little gift. A new dress.
Surprise!
How much is this dress, my dear?
$25.
I just happen to have that amount on me. Here you are, my dear.
Thanks. Here you are, my dear.
Thanks. Here you are, my dear.
Thanks. The books are now balanced.
Oh, just a minute, Mr. Conklin. Let me have 50 cents of that money. Here you are, Mrs. Conklin.
But, Miss Brooks, what's the 50 cents for?
Get yourself a mousetrap for the sugar bowl. Well, after the records were straightened out Friday afternoon, Mr. Conklin gave me the money and told me to be sure and deposit it the following morning. This time, I didn't leave it on my dresser. I put the $25 in an old pair of galoshes in the hall closet. I slept until almost 10 o'clock Saturday morning and was just getting out of bed when Mrs. Davis came in.
Oh, I'm so glad you're up, Connie. I thought that was the cutest thing.
You thought what was the cutest thing, Mrs. Davis?
How you tried to give me some advance rent by slipping it into the galoshes you borrowed last night.
Oh, no. You didn't take that money and buy me another dress.
Of course not, Connie. I bought you a lovely leather briefcase to keep the student's savings in.
Well, there's only one way out. Get me a needle and thread.
A needle and thread? What are you going to do?
What can I do? I'll sew some sleeves on it and sell it to Mrs. Conklin.
And there you have our Miss Brooks from January 30, 1949. That is going to wrap it for today's Radio Vault. We'll do it again in a week. And don't forget the mysteries, Sunday Night Mysteries here on WHFR. If you like suspense, the occasional scary show, detectives, You got to check us out on Sunday night at 9 o'clock. We do that all the way up until midnight most weekends. It's a good way to wrap up your weekend, right? Before you fall asleep. Don't forget, much more programming today that you want to hang around for here on WHFR. Coming up later on tonight, Pat Frisco is on special assignment, but we'll have a Spirits Rejoice episode at 6 o'clock. Cold Radio Fusion later on tonight. And tomorrow, as usual, your friend and mine, we're going to have another episode of Thematic tomorrow, followed by Afternoon Jazz, The Jumper tomorrow night. And then who knows? Lots of stuff to keep your radio tuned into 89.3. Have yourself a good day, good Tuesday. We are going to make way for classical